Before we get into this week's Survivor Feedback Show, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors here today, and those are our friends over at 23andMe. I actually got a really good response after I talked about 23andMe on a podcast last week. 23andMe is actually named for the 23 pairs of chromosomes that make up our DNA, and not for the 23rd season of Survivor, which was Survivor South Pacific. I actually took a 23andMe test, which is taken from your saliva. You send it in a kit, which then you get your results sent back to you. And I actually learned a lot of interesting things about my own lineage. And there's way too many things for me to list here. You can find that on 23andme.com. But in addition to finding out about my ancestry, I found out that I am a part of paternal haplogroup J-L26. So shout out to everybody else from JL26. I also found out that I have 262 Neanderthal, or shout out to my friend Brendan Villegas, Neanderthal variants, 262. That is less than 69% of 23andMe customers. And because of that, 23andMe is able to tell me that I am less likely to have back hair, which they nailed it. You can find out things like this and much more with a 23andMe kit if you're interested in this type of thing. It also has a lot of great background about all the different countries that your ancestors came from. It's really cool if you're interested in that type of thing. They've got a great deal right now. Now through Thanksgiving, 23andMe ancestry kits are only $49 per kit. When you buy two or more, that's 50% off the regular kit price of $99 this holiday season. So go ahead and order your 23andMe ancestry service kit at 23andme.com/Rob. To get that offer, that's the number 23 and then spell out ANDME.com/Rob. That's 23andme.com/Rob. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who has become a podcast-seeking missile. I am Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Sestrino here to talk about your feedback questions here for episode number 6 of Survivor David versus Goliath. And I'm very excited to have a wonderful guest with me to talk about all of your feedback questions. You can hear her on many of our Rehap Ups here on the Rehap Ups Network on robiswebsite.com. She is the co-host of all things MTV reality, including Are You the One? And the challenge Rehap Ups that she does with the great Brian Cohen. Please welcome Allie Lasher. Allie, how are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. No jokes about that. It's an honor to be back. I thought truly that I had been benched after coming for the great Ken on Millennials Gen X on my last visit here. So thank you for letting me be Randy Zamboni.
No, that was a big mistake on my part to not have you back sooner. That was really great. You had and I wish I would have pulled the clip from back in probably October or November of 2016, where you were really the first person when Ken was enjoying a huge amount of pre-merge popularity in, like, he was like the cool Gen X in the Millennials versus Gen X season, and you came out and said, hey, what's all the hubbub about this Ken? I don't get it.
Apparently.
Yeah, Rob, thank you so much for the credit on that. I feel like I really was the first person to sniff Ken out and not sniff him out. I mean, fine person, but just in terms of being on the show, the direction the rest of his game went in, I feel like I really was an early adopter there.
Yeah. And everybody was standing Ken, and you turned out to be on the right side of history.
Which I feel like is why you've put me following Randy, like the anti-stands.
Yeah. Look, I'm very happy to have you and Randy Bailey bookend this week on the Survivor podcast circuit. Allie, what did you think of Randy on the recap show?
Oh, I love Randy. I mean, there's a reason you don't put me after T-Bird. I identify with Randy. I feel like Randy's like the extreme version of like the, I was going to say the lowest part of my personality, the best part of my personality, the jerseyest part of my personality. I thought Randy was great. I can't believe you kept him on the show as long as you did, though, with how much you've been insulting him.
Yes. Well, it is a little bit like a rodeo with Randy to see how long I can keep on the podcast. But, you know, there are some people that have been making a comparison that they feel like that Randy was just so super positive about everything that it was almost like that we had T-Bird on the podcast for back to back weeks.
Until he talked about T-Bird and then undid his love for her because she used the same terminology for him as she did Jeff Probst. So,
yeah,
I don't know what to make of that.
You know, so last week we had like a super cut put together of, you know, just how positive T-Bird was. That I have to give kudos to Matt Price, who was at it again.
This is all about love. So insulted in my life. Get away from me, you dork. Something will happen that'll piss me off, so I have to start drinking early. They put me in the stupid Hawaiian shirt. You know, they stuffed Cochran down our throats for 2 seasons, just like they stuffed Rupert down our throats for 4 seasons. Wanna know what you're playing for? Natalie would be 450. The worst player,
yes,
ever. How old do you think I am, Rob?
I don't
wiki it. In Gabon, we slept on the dirt, and it was great. And my heart of gold just sunk down to my balls. You had to go there, didn't you, Rob? Did you not read my f***ing bio on CBS.com?
Yes. I love Snake Dogg.
Thank you again, Matt, good. For that. The Randy out of context clips are just gold.
Oh my god, I'm crying. That was amazing. Like, I forgot when you said they put me in that stupid Hawaiian shirt. Oh, but no, that was great. I would like a copy of that. And speaking of supercuts, Jonathan Foreman, who's a patron and a friend of mine who went to Northwestern with, messaged me saying he wants a supercut of all the time Stephen Fishback has had to pretend to know who I am on Know It Alls when you've plugged that I'm going to be on the show.
Okay. we'll put some of the Wandoff people on that. See if
we're Stephen Fishback. When you were like, I think you meant to tee him up like you love the challenge, but what you said was you love that podcast. And he was like,
yeah. I mean, I feel like that if there's a show that you really like, I feel like that you would check out the podcast that would be on the network. You also host the podcast.
I've also met Stephen Fishback at Northwestern, so there's that. It's fine. Everything's fine.
All right. We'll see. We'll see if we can put something together for that. Allie, did you happen to hear Lyrsa on the exit interview?
I did, and I checked out her beautiful eggs on Instagram. No, I didn't follow
check
that
out
lead
the
too.
Eggs on Instagram. Or maybe we'll save that for social media. We'll circle back to Lyrsa's eggs on social media. But what? I can't wait. What does she do with the eggs? Is it like an Easter thing? Is she coloring the eggs, or is she like, oh, this one is poached, this one is over easy?
So for somebody who plugged their social media, you'd think there'd be like a lot more eggs early on. So I was a little disappointed. Low egg content for somebody who's bragging about their egg content. I did see one. It appeared to be some sort of egg scramble over toast. And it wasn't so much that the eggs were beautiful. She did like a nice little plating with some seasoning. So I don't know. I take issue with her claim that she makes beautiful eggs. But
excuse me?
Someone wants to go deeper. I wasn't willing to go that deep in her Insta feed to find the beautiful eggs.
Yeah. No, I don't see a ton of eggs on here, but still lots of other great stuff here on Lyrsa's Instagram. I don't like too many pictures of food on Instagram. I'm not one of those people.
No, but if you're going to tout your eggs, show me the eggs.
Yeah, a
little
bit of
the eggs, Lyrsa?
Bait and switch.
Where are the eggs? Serial season 4. Where are the eggs?
Okay. But Lyrsa was great. One day, we're going to do a hell of a feedback show with Lyrsa.
Oh, I was very excited to hear you say that after the interview. I think she'd be great. I stand that.
I think it'll be very fun. Okay. So, Allie, talk to me about Survivor David versus Goliath. We have finished the pre-merge of this season. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. People, I was going to say people hate me, but that's besides the point. I tend to view Survivor episode by episode. If I'm liking each episode, I'm happy with the season. I know people hate that. That's me. Whatever.
Wait, why? Why is that such an unpopular opinion?
Because people care about the winner, or they care about the arc, or they knew it was going to be Michelle because they read the Egypt the whole time, or Edgic, or
the Egypt
eggs. They read the eggs, like whatever. I clearly don't care about that. I'm just happy enjoying every episode. I've thought all of these episodes have been great episodes in the pre-merge. And I also think, more importantly, we're set up for a really interesting post-merge. You've mentioned before, you know, we don't know who's going to win. It's even hard to really rule people out from the win with this season. And the other thing that's great, I think, is there's no one I'm truly rooting for. Like, all of my Lyrse eggs are kind of spread out between a lot of people's baskets.
Jackets.
So if we... jackets, yeah, eggs and jackets. If Christian were to go next week, which is not what I think is going to happen, and I tend to like Christian, I wouldn't be destroyed and the season wouldn't be destroyed over it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is better. You would much rather have a very diversified portfolio in terms of that there are many, many characters and you're not all in with one person, as opposed to, you know, a season where we love this person and this person doesn't win. Burn it to the ground.
Exactly. Exactly. And I rarely get like that, but... there's also not that many people that I strongly dislike, which might make for an uninteresting podcast. You know, I haven't sussed anyone out here yet as someone who's going to ride the Ken villain train to the end. Not that Ken was a villain, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't hate anyone so much, so I'm enjoying that.
Yeah.
It's a nice change for me.
Okay, well, let's start off with the tribal council from this week. And this is a question from Bob from Columbus. And he takes an interesting approach to it, but let's see where it goes. That he tweeted to say that Mike White talked about how consequential this vote was. Can you use Doctor Strange's Infinity Stone and see all of the different possible futures? Does the future winner of David versus Goliath change if he votes out Angelina instead of Lyrsa? Or does the best player win regardless of this vote? So I don't know if you are a big fan of the MCU, Allie.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I saw this tweet and it was the one that I couldn't read because I didn't know
what
it
was. Okay, well, let's forget. Let's take the Infinity Stones out of the picture. Okay, but this is an interesting question of that. Do you feel like that the winner of this season was changed based on this vote? Or do you feel like that whoever was going to win would have won whether or not it was Lyrsa or Angelina that got voted out?
So I think that depends on if we think the David Goliath division is going to matter. I mean, this is the more obvious answer. If we think that division is going to matter as we head into the merge, I tend to think it's not going to matter, in which case getting the Goliath majority over the Davids here is not going to really dictate too much. I do think when you are the first person to turn on your own tribe, it gives people on your tribe permission to turn on you. I think that really happened with the Goliaths, like when Allison saw that Natalie had been voted out, her face to me just read recognition of like permission to flip on the Goliaths now after two people. I don't know if that's really making sense, but that's what I saw. So I think that's a risk for Nick, that he's not really going to be able to lean on the David Strong thing if he wants to do that because he had a hand in voting out a David. So I think that might be a knock to his future. But overall, I think the division is going to disintegrate. So I don't think that this will have such a great impact on the winner of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know that Mike felt like that this was the most important vote in the game so far. And maybe it might be, but I do think that we saw in the Orange Tribe, that I believe that's Vuku, that they had where it was the Goliaths turned on one another. And then we saw where Goliaths turned on one another once again last week's vote. And then so a David went home. And so I don't think that those party lines are, so strict like we saw last season where it was Navidi versus Malolo. I think that we are going to get a very intermingled merge coming up next week.
Yeah, and I don't think also, like, the end game has changed, like, the winner. But I do think next week is a lot more interesting now that Angelina's moving on, because as we see in the preview, but just generally, we could assume this from seeing her game versus Lyrsa's game. Lyrsa was interested in playing like a really loyal to the end, David strong game. And I don't think anyone would really see her as a threat in the individual immunity challenges. So it would kind of be, I think we'd get purple Lyrsa or blue hair Lyrsa going into at post-merge game, whereas Angelina is going to come in hot. She has just the right amount of like zero self-awareness, not the right amount, zero self-awareness to be able to play the game really well. So she thinks she's like at the top of this decimated Jabini tribe. So I think she's going to come in hot in the merge. So at least we'll have a few more interesting episodes, unless she goes out next week, which is also possible. So I think it's changed the next few episodes or the next episode for the better and hasn't impacted the end game at all.
Allie, what's been your take on Angelina so far this season? I know you just said that you felt like that she is somebody that you feel like is lacking self-awareness. Have you enjoyed watching her on the show?
No, but I should give her more credit for making the episodes a little bit more interesting. I don't personally like her as a player. I think once she like shushed Jeff at Tribal, she was done. Like, I actually thought she was going home just because of that they included that.
I meant to pull clips from that. She had a couple of moments at that tribal council where I was thinking about doing a whole thing about how Angelina wants to have her own tribal council, where she said to Jeff, like, he asked a question. She's like, I'll get to that. Hold on a second. But she wanted to talk about something else first.
Yeah, as a law student, that does happen sometimes in class where, like, the professor's trying to get you to the place you need to be, and the student who's, like, so not self-aware to know to follow Jeff where you need to go is like, in a minute, I'm still busy with this nonsense that nobody's going to care about. I'll get there. I'll get there. You have been posting the show 37 seasons. I'm playing this game now. I'll get there. You'll wait for me. I thought she was done right there, because Jeff has to hate that. That has to be the least exciting thing for Jeff.
Yeah, but he didn't seem to mind it that much. I think that he felt like, okay, well, this is going to be a good moment.
I mean, maybe. But I just thought her goose was cooked there. But also, I think she made three terrible blunders this episode, just right off the bat. I thought that, or I guess carrying over from last week, I thought voting for Lyrsa knowing Natalie was going to go home over the jacket is the stupidest thing in the world. You covered that ad nauseum. I'm sure you don't want to hear about that, but that's, I had to just throw my two cents in.
Well, if you have anything to add, I'd love to hear it.
I mean, it's something new. You have to appease the tribe you're with over the jacket, but I think whatever. I have nothing new to say that hasn't been said. Although I do agree with Randy, or I don't know if Randy said this about the bed or if he said this about the jacket. I don't know that this is really going to carry through with Nick and Mike. I don't think Nick and Mike wanted to work with Angelina anyway, and now they have something to blame. Like, oh, look at what a good liar she is. But I do think it will be used as an easy way to flip Goliath in the merge. Like, that's a story you can tell that might be reason enough to make someone the merge boot.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought her approach after Tribal was even more infuriating.
Wait, is this mistake number two or three?
This is mistake number two.
Okay.
Mistake number one was voting for Lyrsa.
Okay.
Last week. Mistake number two brings us to this week. Her approach after that tribal to me was mind-boggling. Like, it's not better to say, I didn't vote for you. I only voted for you to get her jacket to manipulate her, and you were that expendable to me. Lyrsa blew that out of proportion, but that was stupid. She should at least try to be like, look, I just felt bad for Natalie. We had gotten close through being Goliath. I wanted to throw her a pity vote so she didn't feel upset. You know, I feel like that would show more to Lyrsa. It's not that I didn't care about you, but I cared about Natalie and I knew you were safe. Do you think that would have helped at all, or Lyrsa still would have been pissed?
I feel like it made it worse.
What made it worse?
Telling her
that would have made it worse.
Telling her about how I didn't want you to go home, but I just wanted the jacket.
Yeah. So I'm saying that was the mistake, that she should have said, like, it was if she's going to make the vote, which was a mistake, it was out of respect for Natalie, had nothing to do with the jacket, had nothing to do with you. It was just a final courtesy to her as she went out. I feel like that at least sounds a little bit better than, you know, I wanted her jacket.
Yeah.
But maybe Lyrsa would have been pissed either way.
Well, I think that Angelina's biggest flaw here, and I've been thinking about this a lot as we've gone through here in the pre-merge, because she's been such a big character. And I think that, you know, strategically, I think that she's been controlling probably maybe even more than we've been giving her credit for, because I think she's, you know, such a force of personality in that group, is that I think that she's bad at pretending to be nice. And I think that we saw Natalie talk about this in her exit interview, and she said that she felt like that Angelina was fake. And I wonder if it's a disservice for if she would maybe, you know, instead of like trying to appear weak and, you know, like begging for the jacket. Like, I wonder if she would come out there with a little more Angelina napalm, if maybe people wouldn't have a negative reaction to the that she's pretending to be nice and coming off as fake.
Well, what does that look like? Like, Natalie, give me your jacket, even though I didn't vote for you.
Well, like, I don't know what it looks like in the game, but I feel like that people would stan her more on Twitter.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I think, I guess that's like, it would look like Natalie, right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
But that brings to the, I think the third mistake she made, though, kind of goes to what you think she should be doing, which is after the challenge, I think this is where we see her lack of self-awareness. She doesn't seem like she has any damage to undo. Like, she just thinks she can go work with Lyrsa. You know, we don't see her saying, I want to work with you. We're both Latino women, or whatever her rationale is for wanting to work with her. She just kind of is like, so what do you think we're going to do? You know, like, she's not giving a pitch. She's not apologizing. She's not coming at Lyrsa with the things Lyrsa would maybe need to hear. And you could argue that at that point, it's already foregone conclusion that Lyrsa will never work with her. But the fact that she comes in with such like such confidence that Lyrsa, of course, will want to work with her, that she doesn't even have to pitch it, I think is hubris.
Yeah. So you think it's because she has too much pride?
Maybe. I mean, I'm getting the fake thing, too. Like, when she has that little line of like, it's bittersweet. Natalie was bitter, and for the tribe, it was sweet. Like, that is so lame, and I feel like that fakeness is coming out
here,
throughout.
I have to kind of have that clip.
Natalie going home is bittersweet. She was bitter, and for the tribe, it was sweet.
But, I mean, who's that fake to? I mean, she was just in the confessional by herself.
It's fake in the sense that it's manufactured, right? Like, there is something, even when you listen to a podcast, right? Like, when you could tell someone has pre-prepared lines, it's way less funny and fun to listen to than when somebody's just, you know, telling it how they see it right there. Mm-hmm. Like, that was like, oh my God, I just thought of the greatest thing. Is the camera rolling? Okay, let's do it. That to me was pretty fake appearing.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, she has, you know, a good sense of like the strategy, and, you know, I like her confidence in the game, but I feel like that she seems to be just rubbing some people the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, I think the fatal flaw in her game is going to be that she reckon, and maybe this is like the future. Will this affect, how will this vote affect the future? Is that to me, Angelina views this as a vote to save her and not a vote like for Mike and Nick. Like, this to me was not a vote to save Angelina. This was a demonstration of trust between Mike and Nick, and in Mike's mind, like a way to give the Goliaths a majority, like in Mike's mind that mattered. And it had almost nothing to do with like, we want to work with Angelina. We're three strong. We're saving her. I think she saw it as that. And I think that's kind of the problem, that she's not stepping outside of her confidence to say, do I have reason to be this confident? Do I have a strong three? When we merge, are my people still together? Like, I don't think she's looking at that. And we see it in the next scenes for the next episode.
Right.
She's just gathering the Goliaths together and playing all of her cards. So she just has this confidence. I think what Randy was saying is right, that she, like, and you're saying, like, she's strategic. She definitely understands the game to a certain extent. But if she goes home, watches herself, understands the errors, and comes back, that will be a better player than Angelina today.
Yeah, I do think that she's in some way is kind of like an Andrew Savage, where, you know, and in the same way, you know, coming into the merge, you could see her, you know, next week. All right, well, we're just going to do the Goliath thing. You know, we're Goliath strong. OK, so we're going to just start picking off all and sort of like just be, you know, very bold and very confident about that. And then there being some sort of David insurrection, and she ends up being the target of that, you know, somewhat early on in the first part of the merge.
which she should be tipped off to. She's seen 2 weeks in a row people, Goliath majorities coming back with having voted out Goliath. So the fact that she still thinks Goliath strong is a thing when she herself was a team who voted out a Goliath, like, I just don't understand why she thinks that if she's not being, unless she's not being self-reflective at all.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to watch. I'm very excited to see that. And then, you know, how many Goliaths potentially would jump ship. And the Goliaths do have the numbers going into that merge. So somebody would have to ultimately flip. I mean, the preview leads us to believe that Alec could be that person potentially working with the Davids. But should be very fun to see how that goes. Do you think that that is an okay comparison, or I'm way off there with the Andrew Savage?
Doodled a beanie onto the picture I have of Angelina in front of me, and it looks pretty good. So no, I think that's fair to say. I don't have anything else to add, but I think that's a fair comparison.
Okay. So let me play for you a question from Jack from DC, Allie, that we are at the end of the pre-merge, and Jack wants to know, who do you think we might see returning?
Hey, Robin and Allie, Jack here from DC. Wanted to ask who you guys thought had the most upside as a returning player out of this pre-merge group, almost like a Kelly Wentworth situation. Looking forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
Okay, so pre-merge returnee, and Jack says a la a Kelly Wentworth. So I guess let's talk about it in terms of not just somebody who we think could come back, but who could come back and do very well on a second time out, Allie.
That's really interesting. And I have to just disclaim that I don't have a good eye for this. And I talked recently on the Challenge podcast about this because, you know, there are people who get very little airtime the entire season, much less get kicked off early on the feeder shows to the Challenge, like Are You the One? And then they get cast on the Challenge and they're there for like 30 years. And I just, you know, have no idea who's going to be good with that. So I disclaim that first. I think Natalie, out of the seven, has the best chance of coming back, but she's not going to do well. So that kind of takes that out of it. I don't know. I would have said B maybe, but I don't think she's ever going to come back because it seemed like they shamed her so much with the quit. We didn't see a ton from Jessica. What we did see, I really didn't like.
I'm on the same page with you.
Okay. I mean, is it Natalia? Is that the answer?
Did Natalia do enough to come back? If I go back to her exit press, though, I do feel like that Jeff did say about Natalia in the exit press that he did really like her and he would like to see her come back.
Oh, I'm shocked Jeff likes Natalia. That doesn't, you know, I'm sure he'd love to see her come back.
and that, I mean, she did have a moment when she went out of the game and was like, you know, I can't even with you, Alec. So, I mean, is that memorable enough?
I mean, what sucks for Natalia is she should not have gone home that week. Like, everybody agreed. Like, Alec, and this is when you were saying it looks like Alec's going to be the one that flipped. We've seen Alec flip for basically no reason when it was the wrong decision. So, I think she got screwed. Is it memorable? No, absolutely not. Like, I don't think any of these people. Pat's memorable.
Okay.
Pat, people remember Pat. My grandma like was so upset when Pat got taken off. People want to, the casuals and the
it
fans
could be
alike,
Pat.
Would want to see Pat.
Pat could be the person who does get a chance to play again because Jeff also loved Pat, and then he could come back and, you know, is he going to rub people the wrong way? Potentially, but who's targeting Pat?
Do you think Pat learned? Like, because Pat kind of got
learned
the best.
What?
Like how to not be annoying?
No, I don't think that was the lesson he took away from Survivor David versus Goliath.
You think he would have taken that from Hallie, so maybe he already had the chance to get that. He didn't follow the rules.
I mean, it could be Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy's done. He's never doing well in this game. I love Jeremy. He was one of my many draft picks. He's done.
Why? Because his exit press was disqualifying?
No, like, I'm more mean, even if he were to come back. Sorry, I'm just laughing at that sentence. Your exit press is disqualifying.
Well, why do you feel like, because I would have felt like that after three episodes of Jeremy, I would have felt like, oh, yeah, he's definitely somebody that they would think about bringing back. So why do you scoff at Jeremy's returning chances?
I don't scoff at his chances to return. If Jeremy comes, Jeremy could play this game 100 times.
Oh, you think he'll be bad every time?
He will never win Survivor. I would put Natalie at 1 in 100 chances of winning. Like, Jeremy will never win this game.
Yeah, he did seem like he was very observant, but he was also not a great people person. So I guess then that brings us to Lyrsa.
No, it doesn't. You think Lyrsa's coming back?
I don't know if she's coming back, but I don't know. It's hard to say that this is an interesting group where there's not really somebody that it's like if you're a pre. And that's, I guess, what's so great about Kelly Wentworth is that if you are a pre-merge boot that is talked about coming back, it's usually because you are such a big character that you got voted off in the pre-merge. And usually that person does not have a great chance to ultimately win the game.
Well, that's the Kelly Wentworth angle. And that's the, like, what I talked about with Nelson on the challenge is, like, it's the person that we maybe can't identify right now because we didn't see them in casting. We don't know them besides what we saw on the show. That maybe, like, Natalia had something that Jeff sees in her that would make her good on the show, and she just kind of got screwed.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, with Lynn out, all respect to Lynn Spielman. She yes. doesn't need my respect. She's got plenty, but she has it. Do you think, like, one of these cast members could come back in 5 years and reapply, and, like, somebody wouldn't know that they were on the show? Like, do you think Lyrsa could dye her hair red and reapply and come back? As a first-timer?
Well, the Survivor casting department, it's not a one-woman shop.
I know,
where,
but even so.
So, like, so this is what you'd have to do. Okay, so if somebody, you know, say, like, you know, somebody, you know, if Janet Koth was going to apply, hi, my name is Janet, and, you know, I'm, you know, whatever, how many years old, and I want to be on Survivor. You know, at what point in the process would that get flagged as, hold on, this is somebody that's already played Survivor?
You're telling me that for season 45, a brunette version of Jessica, even without changing her hair, but let's at least give them that, comes in and she's like, I'm Jessica, I'm 25, whatever she's doing then, and it's been my dream to be on Survivor. I think she could get through again.
I mean, Allie, Survivor 45 is, I mean, in like 4 years, I don't think that
yeah, she's 19, like, now.
Okay, but the people that are working at Survivor, there will be people that work, like, there are people that have been working in Survivor casting for, you know, 10 years. I think that there are still going to be people that are still working there that
it's
will.
It's not that. It's being memorable. I think I could meet Jessica for a month. I could spend a month with Jessica, and then 5 years from now, I forget that we'd met.
Well, maybe
it's a hot take. I'm not here to play it safe. You know what? This is a hot take. Somebody who's was an early
appreciate the boldness, but I think it would have to be somebody from. You'd have to go back a ways to somebody that to when maybe there are not people that are still working in the casting and production. It would be interesting to see at what point it would get flagged.
And let's ignore electronic filing. Like, let's say she got married and used a different name or something, because yes. obviously they type it into a computer. Or if somebody applied, like, maybe they got a new system. Maybe it's season one. I don't know. This is now I'm taking you off the rails.
That's fine. The feedback show is for going off the rails. Speaking of, Allie, I had a little exercise that I wanted to try to do with you. Since we're talking about the pre-merge, you know, I was sort of thinking about the idea of the you know, the pre-merge trip that they go on. And I don't know too many details about, you know, where it is that they go or what they do. But I thought it might be funny if either we did a little bit of fan fiction about how you think the pre-merge trip went down. If you want, we could assign superlatives to the pre-jurors in our Slamtown book, yearbook of the pre-jury. How do you think the pre-jury, these seven people, got along for the next couple of weeks of being together?
I love this. When you said exercise, I was worried it was like Beachbody on Demand or something.
Yes.
This is a more fun exercise. I'm sure that's great for fitness, but this is more fun for me right now.
Yes.
Okay, the first questions we have to address, and you can probably help me with this, I hope, is do medevac/quitters, the medevacees or quitters, go on the pre-merge trip?
I believe they do. I mean, unless so I vaguely remember from first one out, I think that Pat's injuries, I think they would have sent him home and then he wanted to stay. I think if I recall that, but I'm not sure if he stayed at Ponderosa the whole time or they ended up sending him off with everybody. But I do believe, so for the sake of this exercise, let's pretend they all were together, all seven of them.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure.
So I think B and Jessica, definitely a click.
Oh, yeah, because they were already from the game. Yeah, that's right.
Now, does Natalia join that clique, or is she, like, a part of the resistance of the clique?
Okay.
Like, in my mind, Jessica and B are, like, total mean girls on this trip.
Okay, so I think that based on some of the exit press, that it sounded like from Natalie that Natalia and Jeremy were tight, because I think that they were the two anti-Natalie people.
Now, is Natalia still friends with Jeremy, given what he did to her friend Angelina in the exit press?
Well,
I would like to know if that stayed, if they stayed together there.
I think that based on what Natalia's answers were to the question, she seemed like says she was more pro Jeremy. So I feel like that whatever happened on the pre-jury trip, will, you know, put on her speed dial Jeremy above Angelina.
Ooh, the speed dial. Randy's a high-powered phone gadget. Speed dial right here. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
So I feel like that they are roommates on this pre-jury trip.
What kills me about this, and I'm like dying to say it, doesn't matter here at all, but one of my favorite podcasting moments is when you talk about having to go snorkeling with Rudy and Tina. It's like the funniest thing. Anyway,
yes.
So who's snorkeling here? So, okay, Natalie, I think the biggest interesting dynamic is between Natalie and Pat, because they were similar personalities on the tribe from what little we saw of Pat. Do you think they clash, or are they like Bradley and Natalie, like the king and queen of Ponderosa?
See, I feel like that Natalie and Lyrsa ended up then becoming friends then, because I feel like that Lyrsa, you know, she's not going to fit in with B and Jessica based on not really getting along. And I kind of feel like that maybe outside of the game, maybe Lyrsa and Natalie put their differences aside. And then, like, Pat is like the mayor of pre-jury.
I don't think Natalie's ever put her differences aside ever. So maybe Lyrsa like was subservient to her.
Yeah.
But
I asked Lyrsa in the exit interview about, you know, sitting next to Natalie at the reunion, and she gave a very political answer about Natalie. So either she has come around on Natalie or she is very afraid of Natalie.
I took that her like we're all family now, we all love each other thing as very much like the persona we're supposed to have, especially in that, and she's now experiencing like all the hate and the disgustingness that is the internet. So I feel like she's now trying to rise above retroactively. I don't know that applied on the jury trip.
Okay. So
I think Jeremy and Lyrsa, why can't Jeremy and Lyrsa be friends?
Jeremy and Lyrsa can be friends. I mean, sure. I mean, so you want to put then, is it a three-person room? Is Lyrsa in the room with Jeremy and Natalia?
Do you get say on who you room with? I've never been on a pre-jury trip.
I think you have a roommate.
But do you get say, or does production put you in a room?
So my pre-jury trip was an unusual one that we did not go do like fun stuff and then go and have roommates and things like that. So I am not the expert. So again, this is all fan fiction.
I'm sorry. I just keep picturing Rudy with a snorkel. And it's the best thing in my life.
Well, I mean, Rudy was a Navy SEAL that he used to snorkel like in like swamps at nighttime to go on missions and stuff like that.
Doesn't make it less funny.
It's Richard Hatch in the snorkel. That's the image you should not have in your head.
I don't know. My snorkeling mind had been occupied with Christian in this episode explaining to me what a mask was for. So I've got too many snorkel images conflated here.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm willing to put the final ruling on this jury trip as Jessica and B. I'm almost thinking maybe Jessica, B, Jeremy, and Natalia could all hang out, and that would leave, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. Well,
this is hard to do because we're just totally making it up.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll come back to this and see if there's anything else that we want to add to this story of the pre-jury adventurers in this spinoff of Survivor David versus Goliath. Let's talk about we saw the man who wore the snorkel in this episode, and that was Christian. He is part of the Brochachos.
Can I quickly request, before we segue, to get T-Bird to get to the bottom of this, and then we do an emergency podcast where T-Bird explains what happened on the pre-jury.
Yes, T-Bird needs to make friends with people on the pre-jury to be able to explain all that to us. So we'll put her on top of all this. She's our chief correspondent out in the field.
So, all right, but Christian, I'm looking forward to that, but let's talk about Christian. Sorry to interrupt.
Allie, okay, where is your barometer on Christian right now?
I really like Christian, and I think that had Cochran not well, this is tough, right? Because I think had Cochran not existed, Christian would not exist. Like, Cochran had to walk so Christian could fly. But if
it's my favorite quote ever.
If Cochran was not on the show, I think people who dislike Christian would like him more.
Right, because he would be the first Cochran.
But he's better than Cochran, and no disrespect. I'm not a Cochran hater, but Cochran is like a normal person still. Like, Christian, you can, like, see that Christian, like, when Christian is doing his big, well, people were annoyed with it, I'm sure, but when Christian was doing that big confessional about, like, I've done years of self-improvement and it's paying off, and, like, it was such a relatable thing for him to say. I think no matter where you see yourself on the scale from, you know, socially awkward to normal, like, I mean, I don't know if you and I are really able to talk about normal, but I think it's extremely relatable to have a fear of being ostracized, especially when you go on Survivor, which is, you know, a big social experiment and relies on your ability to make social relationships. When he's succeeding at that, like, I think that appeals to everyone in a way that, and you talked about this, like, did we get Cochran really talking about, what did you say about the bullying?
Okay, so I think this. A major difference between all of this is that I do think that we see Christian talk about, you know, human experiences and emotions in a way that I don't think that Cochran ever did. And I'm talking out of my butt here a little bit, but I don't think that Cochran really talked about his experience and the emotion of it all and sort of like the transformation that he made, other than I grew up watching this show. I was a super fan watching this, and now I'm here. Jeff Probst is saying, hey, come on in, guys, and I'm one of the guys. Like, it was sort of like that he talked about the transformation of being a super fan of the show to being a player on the show and doing well on the show. Whereas I think that Christian is talking about a little bit more of a, you know, transformation in terms of like his emotional journey.
And I think we got it a little bit from Cochran. I don't know if I just believe it more from Christian. It was more like, I'm in a sweater vest and I'm sunburned on day one because I'm out of my element. I don't camp. Like, that kind of stick.
Yes, but it was like jokey. Yeah. It was like, like, what am I doing here? I don't know what this is. Like, I why am I out here? I don't belong out here in the sun. I'm not Ozzy. I'm not, you know, I'm not somebody, you know, I'm not Eddie or any of these guys. And I don't know if that's exactly the same as what we're getting from Christian.
And maybe it's because Cochran had already sort of like completed his metamorphosis earlier before coming on Survivor, but you know, he was wanting to enter comedy and wanting to enter TV, and I think had a better understanding of like production, whereas Christian is going to go back to his like teaching and robotics. Like, I don't think Christian's going out to LA to write for the neighborhood.
Yeah. that would be great. Assuming the neighborhood is still on the air. But, you know, if I can make a subtle distinction between this, and, you know, we're really doing a lot of amateur psychology here in this episode of the podcast, but I'm here for it. It's great. So Cochran, if I may, I believe his transformation took place off the show. Cochran was never accepted in Survivor South Pacific other than when Coach let him wear his jacket and his coat. So Cochran did pull off the Angelina move with Coach of, Coach, can I wear your jacket and your hat? But other than those guys from Upolu, you know, using Cochran for a vote and then ultimately voting him out at 7, I think it was off the show where Cochran was sort of the star of the season, where then people came came around to him, and all of a sudden he was sort of like the toast of the town, and then he became like sort of a shoe-in for All-Stars, and then he had already become like a, you know, cool guy that people wanted to be around before he played in his second season. And so Christian, meanwhile, went from sort of being, I don't know if you want to say that he was sort of, you know, not super popular coming into the season, but here on the island, like the Savaii people were really hard on Cochran the whole way through.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting distinction and brings me to what I was thinking about this episode when I was watching Christian talk about how he's always wanted to be someone that people want to talk to. I don't know if Christian is ready for his reception outside of the game. Do you have a handle on how Christian has been reacting to, I imagine he's mostly insanely popular. And to me, somebody whose like biggest goal has been to just like be someone that a couple people want to talk to might be tremendously overwhelmed by the Cochran level of fame he'd be getting. Whereas Cochran had some more time, I think, to like segue from, like you're saying, from reject to hero.
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge too to go for, you know, through this transformation, and then everybody wants a piece of you, and you know, I think that the Big Brother players really struggle with this because this all changes, you know, while they're in the house and they come out and then they have to deal with that. They went from they were nobody to then a lot of people want a piece of them. At least like the survivors go through it where it's sort of like the frog in the pot of water that's getting progressively hotter every single week.
I'd like to go on the record as saying the Big Brother players do absolutely nothing wrong. They're God's gift.
Yes,
they're amazing.
Yes.
And I have nothing negative
so
to
great.
Say about them.
So great. We love all of them. So,
Sally Lasher.
Okay. I don't know how we necessarily got here, but I think this is an interesting conversation.
That's like the story of my life. I don't know how we got here, but it's interesting.
Yeah, we're talking about Christian. Okay, so Christian is part of the Brochachos here. Let me play for you a question. This is from Adam. Has an important question about the Brochachos.
Hey, Rob and Allie. This is Adam from Minneapolis. I'm officially confused. I watched Survivor the other night and saw Christian feed John like a baby bird. He then described this as part of what makes him a cool guy. I tried the same thing with one of my coworkers, and now I'm more of an outcast than Skinny Ryan. What am I doing wrong?
Yeah. So there was a lot of the Brochachos feeding each other. I believe it was it Christian feeding stuff to Dan? And I don't even know what it was. It looked like it was some sort of like dog food that he was feeding to Dan in the episode.
There you go. All right. Brochachos. We feed each other the way we need to feed each other.
Why do the Brochachos have to feed each other?
I think I'm taking this too seriously, first of all,
impossible.
I would love for them to have fed each other like a baby bird, but I feel like we have to correct that a baby bird would be mouth to mouth. That did not happen. I believe it was hand to mouth, correct?
Hand-to-mouth.
Or did I miss something wild?
That is correct. It was more that I believe Christian was feeding Dan the way that you would feed a giraffe in a petting zoo.
So I think he was feeding John, and the reason that this stuck out to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but I did watch it. Like, Randy and I have very similar methods. I also watched the episode for a second time the day we recorded this.
Because you are incredibly inebriated during the first viewing?
I do have a Survivor party, and it was a Survivor Spooktacular last night, so I'm not saying I was, or Wednesday, I'm not saying I was inebriated, but it was a lot going on for me to pay attention to.
Yes. Do you still watch the show with casuals on a Wednesday night?
The casuals have turned into big fans.
Like Christian, they have evolved. They have gone from Survivor Davids to Goliaths.
They have evolved. I actually requested Survivor costumes. Only two other people and myself came in a Survivor costume, so maybe they haven't evolved that much. They didn't pull out their Survivor best.
What was your Survivor costume, Allie?
So I was Natalie. I wore a blue coat and a buff, and I had a speech bubble that said, you know, I don't want to, I don't have to, so I didn't, whatever that quote was. It was going to be another quote, but I had listened to your podcast when you talked about that, and it was so funny to me. And so I wrote it down. I forgot that most people don't really pay attention to the exit interview line like they give at the end of the episode. So nobody knew who I was, even though we had just watched the episode together the week before.
Yes.
So why should I? I don't have to. And I chose not to.
It's amazing. I was pissed at everyone. So it was really true Natalie fashion.
Okay. What were the other two guests that were in costumes?
So my friend Liz was a fantastic Jeff Probst that she just collected some clothing items between two guys here, and it was unbelievable.
Okay.
And then another fan. So these are both fans. Another fan, Brenna, very creatively just brought a purple rock, and she was someone who had been rocked out of the game.
Okay. All right. A little bit of Cheapo Depot. Yeah.
I'm fine with a Cheapo Depot, you know?
Okay. All right. So, all right. Back to the brochachos feeding each other.
Yes.
Why is this part of the brochacho initiation?
So it's not part of the brochacho initiation. I think those are just guys who like to do anything and be like, brochachos. It's like they're doing parkour. Like they just say brochacho at the end of it. And then it becomes a thing that they did that was brochacho-y.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is significant about this scene is I think there's a definite rift. Like, I think most people would probably think Dan and John are close and Christian's like the third. Dan would like to think that. I mean, he's basically said, like, I've indoctrinated Christian. What I think is interesting, you often talk about like the Dodo music that gets played. This wasn't Dodo music, but he's saying how amazing he is, laid over a scene of him very stupidly eating a hot pepper that's too hot for him to eat. Like, to me, this was the equivalent of Dodo music. And then this happens while literally behind Dan's back, Christian and John are feeding each other. So what I think Dan's problem is going to be is that he's assuming that he's the head of the snake and him and John are together and Christian is their third. But really, I think Christian and John are developing an actual friendship, a real brochachomance, mm-hmm. if you will, while Dan is getting cut out of it.
Not to go too much into Big Brother, but could you compare the brochachos to the three men of level 6?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, right? Because then that would be Tyler would be the Dan, because Brett and Winston were obviously.
Oh, no. See, I see it as that. So the Brett and Winston here, that the mayor of Slamtown is Brett, Dan is Winston, and then Tyler is the Christian who ends up sort of like was the third wheel to the bros, but then ends up much longer in the game than one of the brochachos who ends up being, you know, really forgotten very quickly.
Yeah, so in terms of the game, I totally agree. In terms of, like, closeness, like, I guess I've had to follow Winston and Brett a lot recently because I said this on, just like I was the first one to suss out Ken, I think my actual brother was the first person to really be standing Brett and Winston. I
yes.
said it when I was on the podcast with you.
Yes.
I was sleeping on them. He was not. So now anytime they do like a little couple's costume, I send him a screenshot of it. So I've been very in the know with Brett and Winston. So maybe that was clouding my vision.
And I don't know if you follow on social media. It does seem as though Dan and John Morrison do like couples posts.
Oh, see, that's interesting. I try not to because I don't want to read too much into it. So if I was doing that, then I would be like, you know, then I would be.
I mean, not to the degree that Brett and Winston do, but they've like posted like pictures like with each other and stuff like that. Okay, so the brochachos feed each other. This much we know.
Well, this is the other thing I want to say is the evidence to why I think John and Christian are building so much something stronger. And again, who you know, I'm out on a limb. I'm always out on a limb when I come on here, but
we love it.
It's very interesting to see. John, I think this moment, this underreported moment where John is explaining like the science of dance and what makes dance really great is misdirection. Like to me, that is John trying to have the like highest brow conversation to connect with Christian in his way. It's like I said this on the B&B a couple seasons ago, but my highbrow television show I keep in my back pocket is Veep. So that's not really a highbrow show, but to me, it's the highest brow television I can speak to.
Okay.
So that dance moment to me was John actually trying to connect with Christian, where we don't see any of that from Dan.
Hmm. Okay. So what does that mean?
I think it's evidence that Christian and John are actually building something stronger than what Dan is building with Christian or John.
Okay.
That the real two brochachos are Christian and John, you remember when he's like, the real key to dance is misdirection.
Yes, misdirection. And that's why the moonwalk is so effective. And then Christian starts talking about popping and locking. So that's interesting. So you feel like that the real power, the power structure in Slamtown, the mayor and the comptroller are really, like, Slamtown is the real thing, whereas the brochachos, we got the president and the CEO of the brochachos. Forget about that stuff. That's like the fake alliance.
I think that Dan eating the pepper this episode while talking about how great he was, Christian and John are
the pepper is a metaphor.
He's gonna get burned.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. So that Dan is he eats the pepper. He shouldn't. And what is the pepper an analogy for? That he's in over his head. Is it a forbidden pepper?
I think it's more like he thinks he's got security in eating that. Like he's safe to eat it. And he's not. He gets burned by it. In relying on the pepper, now we've gone too far. Yes. But I just think that was the equivalent of the Dodo music happening for Dan.
Yeah. Interesting. Let me give you a tweet from one of our listeners, Elizabeth Berry 9 on Twitter. She said, did you notice that the reward was veggie kebabs? Aren't they usually steak and chicken kebabs? Are the producers finally listening to the doctors who took care of Bradley and Joe Del Campo? Did you notice that in the episode when Jeff talked about what the reward was going to be? Allie, listen to this.
Let me show you what you're playing for.
Yeah.
First tribe to finish. Utensils, herbs and spices, 10 vegetable kebabs.
Yum.
Second tribe to finish, 2 kebabs.
That was like 1 week. Yum.
Well, did you see Davey looked at that like it was the $1 million?
Yeah, well, but I think that it looks good, but then veggie kebabs, with all due respect to the veggie bob community, is really unexciting, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little disappointed because I think we would have gotten a kebab argument on Jebeni, just like we got the egg argument if it were meat. Like somebody wants to save the kebabs, but then you can't because the bacteria builds, so we cook it. So I wish we got a kebab argument also. Yeah, it's a little boring, but I think probably better.
Yeah, we can't afford a medevac at this point in the game. But it's a good thing that Alec Christie wasn't there.
I'm a meat collector.
Less intense, severe emotional, not emotional distress. God, that's a legal thing. What's Steven's thing?
The severe gastrointestinal distress.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, but Allie, that. I don't know if we got it in the episode, but if Jeff said, all right, worth playing for, I think I guess. I mean, I'm not going to go beast mode cowboy out here for this.
You're going to get some like hate. You don't like vegetables. I hope your sons aren't listening to this podcast.
They're fine. Vegetables are fine. But I feel like that I'm more in the vegetables as a side dish camp. I mean, I'm not going to go crazy and try to overexert myself to win veggie kebabs and cutlery in a survivor reward challenge.
Look, you starved on the island. I didn't. So I'll have to defer to you on what's worth playing for and what's not worth playing for here.
I mean, I'm sure that we'll get some emails from people like, hey, Rob, listen, veggies are very filling. OK, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's a lot of effort to get up for these challenges.
Well, truly the 2 kebabs, which is the saddest thing of all.
Yeah,
is
2 like veggie kebabs.
There was like a little salt and pepper, 2 veggie kebabs, and an exhaustion from having competed in the challenge.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, in Survivor of the Amazon, that we had one of the reward challenges was that it was like herbs and spices. It was almost like the veggie kebab of this season. And we lost that challenge and we're like, eh. You know, who cares? Oh, we didn't get some veggies and oil.
Well, I think Ken would really want that because he likes to cook up some funky things. But if you're not the chef on the season, you're all right. Yeah.
Okay. We haven't touched on Gabby yet in this episode. Allie, what has been your reaction to Gabby in this first half of the Survivor season?
So I've been meh on Gabby. I don't dislike her. I don't love her yet. I can see Stan and Gabby at some point on the horizon. I think this was one of her best episodes. I think everybody was sort of impressed with Gabby here, where, you know, a lot of people are content to just hope their alliance is going to stick together and ride that out. And when she says hope is not a strategy, I mean, Twitter exploded with that, I think.
People like that.
Everybody was happy to see that. And her willingness to reach out to Allison and not just rely on Christian, to me, like, shows that she's willing to play and that she's probably willing to play Christian. I mean, I know that's a big leap. I was talking to one of my main people I talk to, my friend Andrew, before I go on Big Brother or Survivor podcast to make sure I'm not going to say
writer.
Something totally crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's going to be disappointed because I went really off. I haven't talked to him about anything I've said recently. But this is what we really talked about the most, because I took this as, like, we both get the impression that she's more willing to cut Christian than Christian will be to cut her. And I think that's a big failure on Christian's part. I think Christian is playing this brochacho-ness way too much without, at least what we've seen, without him tempering Gabby and saying, I'm still with you, number one. I'm just, you know, in with them to get more numbers, to get on the Goliath's good side. It's still me and you. We've seen her turn over less with B and Jessica. And so I think if Christian's not managing her right, that she's willing to turn on him with Allison. I think that's, I know she didn't address that with her and she still said, he's my number one. I trust him completely. But I think Christian should be doing more to manage their alliance.
I don't think that either one would turn on one another. I don't know if she's particularly close to turning on him. And I don't think that he is particularly close to turning on her. You know, maybe we got down to like the final five, but I really get the sense that these two are sort of each other's number ones.
I don't mean soon. I just think that the fact that she's going outside of the alliance before talking to him, at least what we're seeing on the show, shows that she's not just going to sit and rely on him, at least at this point. And I think down the road, she might be more willing to cut him if it comes to that. I don't mean next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's more interesting here is how she plays this with Allison. I don't think her approach with Allison should have worked. Like, I think her crying and saying, like, I need you is not really how you get an alliance. It should be sort of like what you can offer them from what I've learned from you. But my hypothesis on this is that it works on Allison because it still goes back to the fact that Allison sees herself as a David and wants to be seen on TV as a David. And now she's saying, we're cut from the same cloth. You, me, like you, Christian and Gabby, and my heart and my head and my David self is telling me to be with you. And I think Allison has been waiting for permission to be a David. And this is her way of like shirking that Goliath title that she didn't want from the beginning.
Also, you know, Dr. Allison, I don't know if she ever really had a place in the Goliaths, where, you know, in the early days of the Goliath tribe, we talked about that. It was a group of 10. And then there were the three women that they each had a partner there. And that was sort of a six. That was the controlling force. And Dr. Allison was, you know, on the outs of that. So Dr. Allison, you know, may be, you know, quite willing to jump ship.
And I do wonder how much of her early struggle to fit in with the Goliaths is because, like, we talk about, like, when you're blue collar, you adopt that and you're like, oh, we're blue collar, we work hard, or we're heroes, and that's what we are, and we're hustlers, we'll hustle. Like, she did not identify with the tribe she was put on. She resisted that label, and I don't think she was willing to sort of, subconsciously, she wasn't fitting in with the whole we're Goliath strong attitude.
Okay.
It'll just be interesting to see. It's almost like what we saw with Mike and Nick in the vote. Who in, like, on which side is it going to fall? Is it going to be Gabby and Allison and Christian, or is it going to be Christian, Gabby, and the Brochachos? Like, where is that going to divide? Where is that going to mm-hmm. leave us next week.
Okay. Well, I do think that this sets up a very interesting situation as we get into the merge. And I do feel like that this is going to be one of these seasons where we have seen, you know, the tribal divides fall. But I do think that we are at a point when we are going to talk about the dreaded, whether you want to say voting blocks or trust clusters, Allie, that I do feel like, okay, we have this pair of, okay, here's Christian and Gabby, and then Gabby and Dr. Allison, and then Mason Dixon and the rock stars. And so how many of these different pairs can you put together to form numbers?
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. I was thinking a lot about Nick when I was like making my crazy map of everything that's happening in preparation for the podcast. And so he's got the thoroughbreds you think are out?
The Nick and Elizabeth alliance that hasn't been talked about since the first episode.
Yeah, I forgot about them until maybe 45 minutes before we started recording. But
well, who does Elizabeth have now at this point? Because we've seen that she's not doing so great with Carl and Davey. Other than Alec, we've seen where she doesn't really want to work with Kara. I mean, Elizabeth only has one ally in the game right now.
Wait, did we see that Elizabeth doesn't want to work with Kara? Because I thought they had that horse thing and the right. Christian connection.
But then last week we saw where Kara ended up coming to Elizabeth and wanted to work with her and wanted to throw Alec under the bus. And we saw Elizabeth saying like, hey, I think that Alec needs the Davids more than Kara does. I think that Kara can't wait to get back to the Goliaths.
Yeah, Elizabeth is a funny one. I don't really understand what's going on with her, but I also think things can really change for her week to week or day by day. I think she's really at the mercy of the elements, and we saw it this episode. This, to me, is the most interesting thing we see in Survivor, not when people are just like huddled in the rain actually dealing with the elements, but when we see what starvation and lack of sleep can do to someone's personality. I think Elizabeth is a wild card.
Yeah.
But you're right about that. My question, though, with Nick is, are Mike... Because I could see him kind of unifying these alliances. Like, I could see Mike and Christian and Gabby wanting to work together with Nick. Like, I could see that as a foursome and maybe even bringing in Allison. Mm-hmm. But should Nick really go to the end with, like, Mike and Christian? Is that who he wants to sit next to? Will Nick beat Christian?
I do think it's very early to start to look at those types of things that, you know, we really it's so hard to tell. Like, I do feel like that Mike would be a good person for Nick to go to the end with, because I think that, you know, Nick could sort of play on that. Everybody else could think that Mike White, you know, has done very well for himself. Whereas I'm not sure necessarily what the perception would be of Christian. Seems like that everybody generally has a pretty high opinion of Christian, so I feel like that might be a bad person to go to the end with.
I agree with you about Mike. I actually thought your read was, I had the same read when you thought Mike was going to pull himself out of consideration at this vote. But that's like Jack Black money, not Mike White money. But I don't see Mike being able to like really advocate for himself as the winner of Survivor. Like, I don't think he's ever really been here to win the game. He's just here for the adventure. We saw in episode one. So I agree that he's the right person, but I worry about Nick putting all of his Lyrsa eggs in with Christian and Gabby and Mike and that crew. But I think that's it, right? Like, it's got to be sort of, we move on, spearheaded by Gabby and Christian, their connections, and then Alec, who's seemingly going to bring Christian in with the information about Angelina.
Well, I do think that Nick is a key player here at the merge, because I think that he is also the bridge back to Davey and Carl, because I don't think that Christian and Gabby really have the relationship with those guys. If you remember going back to that vote against Jessica, that Carl and Davey were on the business end of that blind side along with B and Jessica in that vote. So I think that Nick, in some of the work that he did to try to throw Gabby under the bus to that side, that he might be the person who's able to bridge them all together. And hopefully, if you're rooting for any of those people, they can sort of let be-gons be be-gons and forgive Gabby for that blindside.
How real do you think the tension is that we saw build today or this week between Elizabeth, Davey, and Carl? Like, do you think, because I think before we saw that scene, it's possible that Alec comes to Christian with this information and all the Davids can get on the same page about voting out Angelina with whatever Goliaths they want to bring in. Except for the fact that if you think Elizabeth, Davy, and Carl will be carrying a torch to vote each other out.
I think that it was real in the moment, but not necessarily something where now Davy and Carl are saying we need to blindside Elizabeth because she wants to take the bed apart.
I agree with you. And I think you're right that Nick is key, because if somebody's, if they're even going to bring that up, I think Nick could do the like, oh, I totally understand. And like later we'll do that. But right now, like, let's get the edge on the Goliath or whatever he's going to say.
Yeah, it really is an interesting group going into the merge. And you could sort of like draw lines between a bunch of different people. And it really comes down to, you know, who is going to be pulled from whom. And we heard in the preseason, going back to First One Out, that, you know, Christian was talking about what Steven was saying in Second Chances about this idea of sort of like free electrons in terms of, you know, who we like, which molecule is going to get pulled from one thing to form a different compound. And it's funny that that's sort of the situation that we're in heading into the merge.
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep when you
Sorry about that. let's go back to, speaking of falling asleep, Elizabeth could not fall asleep, and she had to take the shelter part. She had terrible back problems. We got a lot of good moments out of this. We saw Elizabeth, and I tweeted out the gif of this earlier where she was very upset, but here's her clip from the episode.
Two things in life I don't like. It's lazy people. And it's stupid people.
She sounds like the girl from, and I'm only realizing this now, she sounds like the girl from The Little Rascals. Getting Darla at all? Is that just me?
Yeah, I could see it. You know, in my mind, she's always Jessie from Toy Story.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. That's probably more often on in your house.
Yeah, but this was my favorite part of all this, which I think has gone pretty under the radar, was Davy's reaction to what Elizabeth wanted to do. Here's Davy. He didn't think this was a great idea.
That's not a half-day project. It's a whole-day project. And I'm like, oh, hold on. Pump the brakes.
A little George Costanza. Boop, boop. Back it up. Back it up.
And I'm like, oh, hold on. Pump the brakes.
That's probably what a lot of the listeners are doing when I say something insane. They're like, woo!
Pump the brakes. Boop, boop, boop. and that also gave us this quote from Carl, which a lot of people wanted us to talk about on Wednesday night.
As far as Elizabeth goes, we just tend to clash because she's a know-it-all, and I just don't, I don't do well with know-it-alls.
How's it going?
Yeah, tough break for you there.
A lot of people were like, oh no, Rob, did you see that Carl said he doesn't like know-it-alls? And I'm like, well, I prefer he says he doesn't like know-it-alls than he doesn't like Rob as a podcast. Like, I feel like that's like, maybe I could just sort of say that Steven he doesn't care for.
You use know-it-all because it's like kind of a negative, has sort of like a negative connotation, right? When you like pick the podcast title. Like that's the joke?
The joke was you know, it's supposed to be tongue-in-cheek of that, yeah, no, we don't know it all because neither right. of us won. You know, like, oh, we know everything, but neither of us are winners. You know, we're sort of like the, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks who don't actually know everything.
Right, so Carl's in on the gag.
He's in on it.
That's what I can take. Okay.
He's in on it. Okay. Let's see. Here's a question for you from Matt in DC. If we can segue back to what's going on with Christian, and he has a question for you about Christian and his growth arc in this season.
I thought he had like a growth. Okay, sorry.
Maybe Dr. Allison could check that out.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Allie. It's Matt Price in DC. I wanted to talk about something that came up in the Rob and Randy podcast, and you guys were talking about how Christian, on the one hand, is really this Goliath in its robotics field. On the other hand, he's this underdog because he's been bullied. And it made me wonder, and I'd love your take on this, do you think it's possible that Christian is such a talented robotic scientist that he created robots that then became sentient and started bullying him? Anyway, I would just love your take on that. Thanks. Bye.
Allie, is that possible? Could Christian have created robots so advanced that they started to bully him?
Sure. No, I thought for a second the question was going that, like, did Christian create a robot, and this is actually a robot of the person Christian.
Like, oh, person Christian is home. This is a survivor robot. This is sort of like Westworld, where then Christian is, you know, just sitting at home watching the show. He sent a robot version of himself. He's created sort of like this perfect survivor character. And so to get through casting, that he's invented this robot, sent it to Survivor, and then he is going to then take $1 million.
And that's, I think, like, why we're getting such iconic sound bites from him that perfectly encapsulate the theme that, like, Jeff could have written himself.
Mm, that's interesting. So do you think that the robot actually looks like Christian, or did he come up with this this character that will appeal to so many different cross-sections of the audience?
I think it actually looks like him, because I think that it's like the Nathan for you, when, like, the guy wants to be cool, so Nathan, like, dresses as him. You watch Nathan for You?
Yes.
The tightrope one. So it's like Christian, the person, wants the notoriety and wants to, like, skyrocket into a person that some people want to talk to. But he doesn't want to go on Survivor. So he's built this perfect specimen robot. And then he's going to show up at the finale like, it was me the whole time. And the robot will have been destroyed.
Mm, oh, no.
Well, you got to destroy camp two of them.
But the robot isn't an exact replica of him.
Yes.
I don't know. I think that the actual guy looks nothing like Christian, and that he has built Christian because that he is, you know, just this this perfect person who is. He says it in the first episode. Appearances can be deceiving.
So what does he have to gain? Is it that you sent a robot out so you have better podcasting? Like, what does Christian, who doesn't look anything like this, whose
he
name might not
is
be
going
Christian.
To get $1 million, Allie. He's built this robot to steal $1 million. The robot only cost $800,000 to build.
Okay, well then, Christian is not the ideal person. Like, Christian has a chance to win, but I would not say scientifically he's the ideal type to win.
Okay, build your ideal robot.
Hold on, I just have to say this. You're telling me that a robot could get through casting, but brunette Jessica in 5 years gets flagged.
Well, but then the robot didn't already go through casting 5 years ago.
Don't you have, like, some sort of vital signs to check when you do your health evaluation? Like, you're telling me that he has a pulse and don't they draw blood or give you a vaccine?
This lifelike robot can't beat the physical for Survivor?
I mean, I've watched some AI videos and they don't look like fleshy beings. Like, it's a robot who can run and stuff, which is
this
cool.
Is well, that I mean, if you're buying that this is an advanced enough robot that he's on the show, doesn't look like, you know, something that's made out of a tin can, then you're really unwilling to suspend your disbelief about the vital signs.
Do you think the rain was a problem for Robot Christian? Is that why they evacuated? Maybe Survivor knows the producers are in on it.
That's going to be the big twist at the end of the season.
Did they commission the robot to prove that there's, like, an ideal, you can win Survivor with these?
So Christian, he actually is a robot. Survivor is in on it. The actual robot is powered by IBM, and it's actually called DAV1D. It's an acronym. And so that's going to be the big reveal. And then we're going to learn so much about robots at the finale.
That's why they seemingly evacuated them so quickly. They couldn't leave, you know, their multi-million-dollar robot on the island to just face the elements.
Yes, yes. This is a big project in conjunction with IBM and CBS that they've got it all figured out. And you've heard it here first.
How amazing would it be if that, you know, on season 37, they had a robot win the game. Or the robot was going to win, and the only downfall goes back to season one, surviving the elements. That's one thing technology cannot do.
Where he's in some sort of, like, day 38 final challenge in a monsoon, and then just completely, like, short circuits and keels over.
And that's why he can't catch fish. Like, he can't do the survival elements necessary to go forward. He can strategize, he can win challenges, but he cannot achieve the actual survival.
The snorkeling he was unable to do.
He's not a fish-seeking robot.
He was not. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this week's challenges. And so let me bring in a question. This is from one of our wonderful listeners. This one is from John Tinkham, has a question about something Jeff said to set up the challenge.
Hey, Robin Alley, this is John. The immunity challenge started, and after Jeff said he would give the tribes time to strategize, did you happen to notice the kind of weird, low, whispery voice that he used to say, I think, let's get started, but it kind of came out more like a baby talk version of what he was trying to say. If you didn't notice, I really suggest going back to listen, because it's really, really strange. Thanks.
Okay, Allie, did you notice, did Jeff do baby talk before the challenge?
Please tell me you have the clip of this. I did not know.
Gabby, going to sit out. Sit out. Take a spot on the bench. Everybody else, give me a strategize. We'll get started.
It was like a Russell Hanson impression.
We'll get started. Game is flawed. Yeah, I didn't think that was baby talk.
I didn't think it was baby talk. I think I maybe... This caller is suggesting that Russell Hanson's a baby. I don't know. It's the reading the signals.
Okay. Let me give you another question from one of our listeners about Jeff Probst. This is from one of our listeners who wants to know, did you think that Jeff got a little too mean this week?
Hey, Allie, it's your friend Rourke. I am calling because I know that we both love it when TJ throws some vague shade at our challenge contestants. And I think Jeff was like pretty aggressive this episode in his challenge shade. And so I was wondering, if you were to participate in a challenge, what do you think Jeff's admonishments would be? And please include any emojis that you think he might use. And I'd like to hear you, like, speak them out. So, you know, like, tilted laugh cry emoji. Have a great one. Bye.
Okay. All right. That's from our mutual friend, Rourke, who wants to know, Allie, what would Jeff Probst say to you in the challenges?
I love Rourke. This is a good question. Multi-layered. Okay. First of all, Rourke, we both know I'm never going to be a cast on Survivor. But thanks for the... Thanks.
What about a robot version of you?
I'm definitely not the ideal person.
And it's artificial living intelligence. Allie.
I might be Sam the robot before I'm robot on Survivor. But
right, don't curb stomp anybody.
No, oh well, I don't want to be that. I just more meant like an emoji on a computer being like carted around. Mm-hmm. I love, it's funny because I did notice that someone tweeted about the challenge drinking game we do on our degenerate show over at Reality TV Wrap-Ups.
Are you degenerates, or is it that it's a show for degenerates?
No, the podcast itself is like I often say, like, we're the drunk aunt of RHAP. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're like the lowest, like the voicemails is to your network, your shows as the MTV podcasts are to rap.
Not true.
Just in Randy's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So no, we like it that way. It's fun. So I put on, in honor of Survivor, the drinking game this week. Anytime someone gets mad at the host TJ, because one of my favorite moments, if not my favorite moment in Survivor history, is when Penner like claps back at Jeff during a challenge and he says, Penner getting mad at me. Like, he narrates Penner's agitation. So I love when Jeff is mean, because it just increases the chances that somebody's going to clap back at him. Not on a newbie season, but on a returner season. I also love this season when Natalie, I think it was last week or the week before, is in the challenge blindfolded. And she's like, Jeff is like, purple tribe falling behind. And she's like, we're falling behind. Just all she knows is what Jeff is narrating. And she's still trying to boss them around based on that. So I love that.
Yeah.
As far as what emojis Jeff would use on me, definite facepalm emoji for sure.
Wait, who uses an emoji?
What do you mean, who uses an emoji?
Yes. Why is Rourke asking for you to use an emoji? Does TJ Lavin use emojis to admonish people?
No, one of the things we do on both podcasts, or either one, The Challenge, is a social media segment ripped off from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in reading the tweets, I just started reading the emojis by description, and mm-hmm. people liked it. So I do the emojis. So the challenge contestants tweet emojis. I read the emojis, and that's what Rourke is getting at.
Okay.
It's inside, you know, it's inside challenge podcasting.
Good. Well, now we're all inside.
So yeah, definite multiple facepalm emojis for sure. Probably the real crying emoji, like the flood of tears mm-hmm. crying emoji. And then just like the guy with his X hands emoji for mm-hmm. sure. Just like, get her out of here.
Okay. Yeah. Jeff was a little hard on the contestants. You know, he did try to build the Jabini tribe up later on in the episode, but he did get pretty upset at them during the reward challenge.
This is a disaster for Jabini. Absolute disaster. Two tribes knowing how to play Survivor, one looking like they're just beginning.
The weirdest thing to me with Jeff and calling this out is on the next challenge when they have the like 150-pound well lids.
Yeah.
Or dog bowls, whatever
saucer.
You want. Saucer. And which was a real dainty way to describe that when it's like 150 pounds. Okay. Is like, it seems like he's trying to get the purple tribe to quit. But then when they don't quit, he's like, they're completely out of it. They have no chance. They might as well quit. But that's the spirit of Survivor. They continue.
Don't
like
give
it was
up.
Very hot and cold.
Yeah. But that's the worst thing you could do on Survivor. In, you know, I guess it's sort of like the story of the whole way through of Survivor is very hard. You will face adversity the whole way through. You will want to quit. And if you don't, we will celebrate you. But if you do, you are a huge persona non grata.
I mean, they should have quit, though. Randy said that. Like, they definitely should have quit. Like, you're not going to win, and you're wasting your energy for the next, you know, the next moment of Survivor. Am I wrong in that? Unless you don't want to face Jeff hating you, and that ruins your chances to come back because you quit a challenge. But I think they should have quit.
I was saying I wouldn't even run a challenge for veggie kebabs.
true. But that was immunity, right? Like when they should the yeah. saucer challenge, they should have quit was immunity. Jeff would have really gave it to them, but it did seem like he was trying to like give them permission to quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I do think that is sort of like the underlying story of Survivor, where it's supposed to be about, okay, who will win? But I do think that sort of what the narrative is, you know, how much can you take and not quit?
Yeah, sure. Right. The whole arc of Survivor is like that because there's the grand reward at the end for not quitting.
Mm-hmm.
But in the individual challenge, continuing that challenge is going to hurt your chances to continue in the game at that point.
Yeah. It's sort of like the prime directive of Survivor is, you know, play hard and don't quit. And if you do either of those two things, if you either quit, Survivor does not like you anymore, or if you stay in the game but are not an active participant and, you know, trying your hardest to, you know, make aggressive moves in the game, then you are also not celebrated.
So the Venn diagram consists of like the few returners and winners.
Mm-hmm. And okay. If you're going to take a look at it, well, not necessarily for the returners, but if you want to take a look at like who is the least likely person to ever come home, figure out who played passively up until the point they quit. That's really what you have to take a look at. And, you know, maybe that's why Jeff got so mad at Janu once upon a time.
I mean, B has to be up there. I right yeah. recency bias is showing, but like she kind of did nothing, which is why Gabby turned on her because she wasn't even willing to reassure talk strategy with somebody in her alliance,
mm-hmm.
and then she quit.
Right. So I think that's interesting to come up with the list. We'll get that algorithm going of like who are the power rankings of the least popular internal Survivor players based on the fact of their passive play before quitting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. All right.
Look forward to hearing you and Mike Bloom discuss that.
Maybe that's why Julie McGee hasn't gotten a return invitation to Survivor.
Just name quitters. I've actually pulled up a list of quitters. Like, we do what you did with Randy. Can you name people have quit Survivor?
I mean, if you can give me the season, I could do it, but I think I'd probably leave some out if I just tried to do it through. So give me the season. I'll tell you the quitters.
Can you guess how many there are?
I think this came up recently because of BI. I would say that there are 12 quitters.
Yeah, it's close. It's like 16.
16. Okay.
Although I think this is like a combination of, it might not be 16. This appears to be like a combination
Medivax.
Of multiple Survivor, no, like different countries.
Okay. Well, we're only talking about the U.S. Survivor today.
Yes, of course. No, my mistake.
With all due respect to international Survivor seasons.
No respect, dude. No, I'm kidding.
I'm surprised that number isn't higher if we're including every international season.
Well, it was two pages. It was two pages.
Okay.
Listen, I screwed up, okay?
All right, no problem. Okay, let's see. What else do we have? Okay, oh, this is a good question. This one is from Jennifer Jones has a question for you. And Allie, far and away, this was the most popular question that we got for you.
Holy moly,
Hi, this is Jennifer from Indiana. Allie, who do you think would be best from this cast to go on to the challenge? And also, Rob and Allie, who do you think should go and do cameos on cameo.com?
Natalie, is there any way I could hack your jacket? Natalie?
Okay. Allie, let's take that in two parts. Okay, so a lot of people called in and asked some version of the question of which Survivor player from this season do you think should go to the challenge? Which Survivor player in general do you think would go to the challenge? And then just for our Survivor-only viewers, I just want to talk a little bit about what's been going on in the world of the challenge, where they have been taking people from not just different MTV reality shows and even like international reality shows, but there have been a shocking amount of Big Brother contestants that have ended up showing up on the MTV challenge, yet no survivors have been able to make that leap. Allie, do you think that there is a Survivor David versus Goliath contestant who you think would be a great fit on the challenge?
Yeah, I can't say I wasn't expecting this question, but I did not prepare for it. So, right off the bat, there's some like attractiveness biases that are going to come into play when going on to the challenge. I think Alec is probably somebody I would want to see on the challenge. I think he's a good looking guy. He's like of the type of person that would get put on the challenge. And I like how like willing he is in terms of for challenge viewing, how willing he is to work with people outside of his alliance and make decisions on the fly. I think that would be fun in the challenge house. And
now, if I may interject, sure. Also that I almost feel like that how you did on the show is in no way, a thing that they're looking at on your resume.
No, I think your likelihood of getting on the challenge is actually it's an inverse relationship to how well you do on Survivor. Because I think the better you do on Survivor, the more likely they're going to want you to return to Survivor and they're not going to want you to be on the challenge. Like, I don't know if this is true. We haven't been in this world of sharing cast members between CBS and MTV long enough. But I think once you go to the challenge, you're not coming back to Big Brother. And I imagine the same would be true for Survivor in the way that Amazing Race, Survivor, and Big Brother doesn't have that.
Interesting. Okay. So once you leave the CBS trifecta, then you, the holy trinity of CBS, then you have to, you say goodbye for good.
I mean, maybe not, but the fact is if you do well enough on the challenge that they keep bringing you back, like if you're Pauly or Natalie or Devon and Jose, like you're going to be having to film 2 to 3 times a year to be on the challenge. Like maybe it's not that Big Brother wouldn't have you back, although I kind of think it's that. But also, you wouldn't be free to film 90 days on Big Brother. Like, you could probably make more money doing 3 seasons of The Challenge in a year than you can doing 1 season of Big Brother.
Oh, my God.
Prize is $1 million this season.
Mm-hmm.
Stay crushing
it. Also a million episodes. Yeah, stay crushing it indeed, Polly.
Okay.
Did you see he was on a tattoo show?
Yeah, I did see that. So with all due respect, spoiler alert. So he was getting a tattoo, and this, we're so far off of Survivor, so I apologize. But to the people that know what we're talking about, hopefully this is interesting, that he's on a show. Can you explain the premise of this show, Allie?
Yeah, so this is a real hot take because I haven't been able to talk about this on my own podcast yet. But really, my podcast is your podcast. So I don't mind scooping myself here. But it appears that it's a tattoo show for people in some sort of a relationship. I didn't watch, but I watched a lot of clips on Twitter. It's co-hosted by Snooki, so I'm in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like two people, they're not always in a relationship, come on, and get to like decide what tattoo the other person gets. I'm not sure what the parameters are otherwise. But I did see the final tattoo that Polly had to get done. He's in a relationship with a challenge great, Cara Maria, and she picked a tattoo, and it is not great.
Yeah, so you are blindfolded. You get a tattoo that another person picks out for you, and then you take your blindfold off and then see the tattoo.
I mean, I'm fuzzy if there's other things between that, like if they can roll anything out or whatever, but like that's basically the rough premise.
Yeah.
As I understand it.
Okay. So I feel like that there's a game in here somewhere with this, but, that I often fear for my life when we get into this subject. So I will abstain, but let's get back to talking about, the first Survivor player to make the leap to MTV.
Yeah, I mean, the contestants from this season, the contenders are Alec and Kara.
Alec and Kara, you think?
Yeah, well, like, it's just, like, based on just young hotness, right? Like, that's what they would care about.
Right. Like for the men, is it fair to say you need to be of a certain mass? And I'm not thinking about AJ Mass, who will join me sometime in the next week.
Not always, but then you have to have something else. Like, there was one guy who was on The Real World whose name was Mike, and he was on the challenge. He came in to, like, sub for somebody else who had gotten eliminated, who had to leave the show. And, like, he was kind of, like, a normal nerdy guy-ish. Like, he wasn't, like, Christian level, but he was, like, the Christian of MTV.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they'll have, like, some contestants who are maybe, like, gender non-binary, who are not, like, massive, or who have something else going on that's interesting to the show.
Okay.
But for the most part, you gotta be the young hotness.
Okay. All right. So who else from this season?
I would actually like to see Davion. I'm a big fan of Davy.
Yeah.
I like Davy. I think Davy has had some funny little quips. I think he's entertaining. I'd like to see him on. But the most likely people that MTV would pull have to be, you know, Alec, Kara, and Dan.
Alec, Kara, and Dan. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that we might look at. No Mike White?
I think Mike White is the cameo, so the easy cameo selection.
Okay, all right. So let's go into that. So Book Cameo, that is the site where you can get a message from any people, from the famous to the infamous, where you put your money down and then you get a message from a number of your favorite celebrities. And there are people who are from the reality TV world who do appear on this website. And there are even some survivors that are out there, including a new addition. Cole Meadors is on Book Cameo.
Thank God.
Yeah. So go ahead and check that out. So which survivor from season 37, Allie, will join the ranks of the Book Cameo people?
Well, I think Mike would be a popular choice because I think I've like underestimated Mike White's fame. Like,
it's
obviously,
popularity.
I love School of Rock. I knew that he was not even popularity, like that he's like semi-famous. Like I thought, okay, he's Ned Schneebly. Some people know that. But today I tweeted out like my psychosis of prepping for this. And there's a tiny picture of all the cast members, a tiny picture of Mike White. And one of my former coworkers texted me immediately and was like, why is Mike White on your Twitter? Is he on Survivor? And I was like, how did you peep that? It's like the tiniest little black and white picture of Mike White.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, he's one of my favorite writers. So I think Mike White has the trifecta of A, writing movies that people would want to get his cameo. And then The Amazing Race and Survivor. You can't really beat that.
Yeah.
If I had to pick some other people, John also has the same
Mayor
kind of thing.
Slantown, right. I think he's got too much going on right now to be on there. I mean, looking at the wrestling stars, with all due respect, they do not appear to be at the top of their game.
All right, so then the obvious...
With all due respect to Bret the Hitman Hart and Papa Shango and Jake the Snake Roberts.
You're going to get tombstoned soon. Watch out.
Why? The Undertaker's not on here.
That's my references. The wrestling. Natalie's got to be the odds-on favorite to be popular on Cameo. I don't
she
know
would
if
be
she'd
great.
Do it.
She would, no, she would be awesome at it. Yeah, I don't know if she's looking for the money, but she would be great. Where she would come in and she'd burn you with the Natalie napalm, but then she'd give you the compliment.
Is Dr. Mike Zahalski on Book Cameo?
He's not. I don't know why he isn't.
That's because I'm trying to weigh out Dr. Alice. I think everybody else will try to get Book Cameo.
Hey, so I heard you wanted a message.
Such a good impression.
I don't know necessarily how you get on Book Cameo. Also, I don't know if you have to be asked to be on Cameo or if they reach out to you of sort of like you're in the minor leagues and you get like coach wants to see you. You're getting the call to the show. You're on Book Cameo. Let's go.
It's crazy to me, Rob, that you don't know that by now. Like, not to disrespect
I haven't
you,
pursued like, it. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I more mean, like, how has somebody not done this and let you know? Like, not you, that you should have figured it out.
Yeah, and Steven was on there, but then I think he turned his account off.
We'll get T-Bird. I think T-Bird needs to cover
yes,
that as well.
T-Bird needs to go and figure out what's going on. T-Bird would be dynamite on Cameo.
Can we get a taste of T-Bird on Cameo?
Yeah. Hey, what's going on? Stephanie 97241. I saw what you said on Twitter. I love your winner pick. That was so great. she's like, I mean, but she's like doing it for free on Twitter.
I wanted to come prepared to this with like, Rob, you've been ignoring your listeners. They hated me when I said this, and we've become great friends, but I don't reach out to my haters. I think that's T-Bird's above me.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. I think I have one more question for you. Let's go to one of our international listeners. Here's Amy from Australia.
Hi, Rob. This is Amy calling from Australia. I wanted to get your opinion on this. Can we confirm or deny that Mike White actually has eyes? I know I haven't seen them.
Okay, Allie, can you confirm this? Does Mike White have eyes?
As if this podcast hadn't been ludicrous enough, we end on, does Mike White have eyes? Fair question. No, I mean, as somebody who also... can get squinty in the sun. I think Mike's just a little squinty.
Yeah, no, he definitely has eyes.
He can see in the future of the game and that Goliath needs 7 when David has 6. So I think he's got eyes now. He's got eyes towards the future.
Yeah. Mike White does have eyes, that he even has an eye in his first and last name.
Wow. You're really slumming it.
So so we can confirm. Yes. Mike White definitely does have eyes. Okay. All right. We're going to get into the Survivor social media in just a moment. But let me just take a moment and thank one of our sponsors here today. And those are our friends over at Quip. And Quip is really great. I talked about it last week on the podcast, and I saw some people were asking questions about it. Quip knows that one of the most important things we do every day is brushing our teeth, even if brochachos are not feeding you snacks. It's very important to be brushing your teeth, but a lot of people don't do it properly, Allie, and that's why Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. It was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even more enjoyable. I've got my Quip set up, and it is so nice, Allie. It's like a toothbrush from the future.
I'm actually getting a Quip. My mom's getting me a Quip as a gift.
Yeah. And the way that it works is that it has a battery inside. So it has sensitive sonic vibrations. It's a AAA battery, and you turn it on and so you can feel it moving. And then it also has like a built-in timer, so you know when to move on to the next quadrant because a lot of people are not brushing their teeth for the recommended 2 minutes. And then it also has this really cool cover that you mount onto any flat surface in your bathroom, gets it up off the counter and out of the way. It's a really cool thing. Everything feels like very sleek and futuristic. And also, Quip is going to send you the recommended replacement brush every 3 months for just $5. So you won't be like 3 out of 4 people who use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective. That's why Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. So that's why I love Quip. Make sure you get in on this and see why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25. So if you go to getquip.com, that's getquip.com/Rob. Right now, you'll get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com. That's getquip.com/Rob.
Yeah, my mom texted me and said, you know, have you heard of Quip? And I told her yes. And she said, should I get us one? And I was like, we need 2 toothbrushes.
Yeah, we each need our own.
So maybe with the offer code, I'll be able to get my own toothbrush.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Good luck with that, Allie.
To be clear, she didn't mean that. I'm not sharing a toothbrush with my mom. I feel like I can't just have that out there. Okay. People don't get the joke. Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and hear what our good friend Jacob from London has to say.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. It's better than brochachos helping each other eat.
Yes. Okay. And make sure you brush your teeth also. All right.
Beautiful.
So we're doing something different here today, and I'm very excited about it because we got a tweet, and I think it was from Mr. Robot Taryn, but I'm not exactly sure, and I didn't end up pulling that one, but I think that sounds about right, where I was asked that, you know, hey, can Allie Lasher do the social media because she's so good at it? And I said, okay, that sounds fun. So we have taken our Survivor social media segment as compiled by the great Alex Rubino, and I have sent it off to Allie Lasher, and Allie is going to talk me through the Survivor social media.
Yeah, usually when I have guests on my podcast, I don't make them work, Rob, but let's see your job here. No, look.
We're in going into year 9 of Rob as a podcast, and anything we can do differently, I think is fun.
This is actually a surreal moment because the first thing I ever did on RHAP, the first time my name was ever said on RHAP, was for helping curate your tweets when you used to have one time when you used to have that Facebook group.
A very long time ago. You're dating yourself.
So now I'm back to read the tweets.
You're back. Time is a flat circle.
All right. So we have Elizabeth Olson tweeted, thanks for the love, y'all. The bamboo bed was torture to my back. I never got more than an hour of sleep in the night. The lack of sleep dramatically affected my ability to think and speak. I became desperate and irrational. Not that she had to tell us that, but I was fighting for my biggest need, brain power.
And that's why Elizabeth sleeps on a Lisa mattress now.
Can I ask you, because this has been asked, but like nobody, no, like I didn't really buy when Steven was saying that the logs, the bamboo needs to be round to not roll off. Like, why can't a half bamboo brace a full bamboo? I didn't really get why she couldn't do like 6 half bamboos.
So yeah, I was talking about this with Steven, and I was saying like, well, why couldn't she just do her bed however it wants? But I think so if everything is like tied together with vines, I think that I don't know if you just started like cutting the vines down. Like, I don't know if it's like one vine that's around everything holding everything together, and then if you undo part of it, then everything is just going to be, you know, loose and rolling around. So I'm not sure. I think it really would come down to how the actual shelter is put together.
What also is still unclear to me is if she thought that like somehow stabilizing it was the key. So like someone at my watch party, a former casual, was like, oh, it's that she wanted to stabilize it from rolling, not that she wanted to make it even, where she thought she could evenly split all the bamboo in half to make it the correct length. Like, I wasn't really sure even why splitting the bamboo was an improvement.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about this. That I got sent a link about this from my friend Matt Cerrone, and to be honest, I have not yet explored the cutting the bamboo in half.
He says,
pretty sure you cut bamboo in half and line it sideways like a C, so it's like C and flatter across the top. I think, with all due respect, I don't think that's how it goes when you cut it in half. Like, I think you would need a million pieces of bamboo. No,
that is certainly not a half day project. I have to agree with Davey on that one. But Matt Cerrone, if you're looking up this stuff about the bamboo to that level, could you send Rob how to get on Cameo? Like, I don't know why that's getting emailed and not the Cameo how to.
Yeah, I would think that if each one of these things is sort of like, you know, 2 or 3 inches in diameter, I feel like if you cut it in half, then maybe just like, you know, flat wise, then it would just be like that, not as uneven between one from the next.
Yeah, I mean, I could sleep on a bag of small pebbles or like rocks. I don't know. I could sleep anywhere, so I can't even really relate to her.
It was never an issue for me on Survivor. It's like, it's nighttime, time to go to sleep. I slept like on a log.
I will say, as a former gymnast who got her back cracked like the way that Elizabeth was getting her back cracked a lot, it hurts to have someone crack your back like that on a hardwood floor. The fact that she was taking a face full of rocks and sand to get her back cracked, she must be in a lot of pain. That was convincing to me. So I hope she got her biggest need, brain power, met. So.
Well, I thought she was going to talk about how that she just had a baby, and I thought that's why she was saying. But I'm not sure if that had anything to do with her back issues.
Well, I was going to say something about my back issues, but no one cares. So let's just move on, I guess, right? This is my segment, so we can move on.
Poor Pat is watching the show like, you think you have a bad back.
Oh, what if Elizabeth was like, I need to be medevaced. My back is killing me. I just hit a wave or something. All right. So Lyrsa tweeted, that special moment when you get a message from a, quote, agency that wants you to do a photo shoot with you, because they love your look. And you get so excited and Google them. And turns out it's a porn agency. Nope, I'll pass.
Excuse me?
You know that special moment, Rob.
Wow, okay.
T-Bird had some tweets, as usual.
Oh, that she didn't get reached out to by an agency, did she?
Not that she's declined or admitted that she's declined. Now, this is going to be me doing a bad impression of your good impression of T-Bird here, but...
I don't have a good impression of T-Bird. I've captured her enthusiasm. That's all I have.
A terrible tribe performance does not equal a terrible tribe. Touche at Jeff Probst. This is more like Wanda. Emotional moment. Hashtag Survivor. It's also said that I think you do a high voice to have a women's voice, and I have a man's voice and have to do a high voice to have a woman's voice also. Mike and at Kai McWilson. Okay, why it's Kentucky, not Kai. Whoops. Having a rock star alliance moment. Hashtag Survivor. Night 17. Hashtag Survivor in all caps. Trust and loyalty and strategy. What's the plan? At Jeff Probst. How much is the hook? What is that tweet? I think T-Bird might have been inebriated when she did. What is the plan? How much is the vote?
How much is the vote?
I think she meant like read the votes. I don't know what's gonna happen, but okay. I was just hashtag blindsided. Not a good feeling. Anybody else with me? At Lyrsa, not what I expect. That's it. We're done with T-Bird.
Oh boy. T-Bird.
Sorry, I'm not even letting you respond. I'm nervous having to do the tweets.
You're on fire.
I'm literally on fire. I'm sweating. I'm so nervous. Okay. Eric Reichenbach.
Yes.
Great guest recently.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say, the podcasts have been great. The podcasts are always great, but the podcasts have been really, really great. Like Sunday, who knew Sunday would be so great? Yeah. I love that podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've been having a lot of fun this season.
It's been one of the best seasons.
Yes. We'll see how this one goes.
This podcast is trash, but all the other ones have been good. I'm the merge. Maybe that's what's going to happen. Like, I'm the merge podcast, and then it's all downhill from here. Hopefully not.
The season, it's like Ghost Island, and then Randy was Chris Noble, and then from here on out.
Randy as Chris Noble. That's a Halloween costume idea.
Okay, go ahead. Eric Reichenbach.
Yes, Eric Reichenbach says, call me a nerd, but I figured this out. Russell haunts, lying, cheating, stealing ghost. Rob Festernino, zombie corpse with hundreds of flies that attack people. Rupert Bonham, create like B-O-N-E hyphen E-M.
Okay, so, wait, so these are Halloween names for people. I thought you were doing like Russell Hantz with like a Dutch accent.
That would be funnier than the Sweet Prowly. No, yeah, I love
Russell haunts.
Crazy backwoods murderer who debones his victims. There are more of these, which I'm not sure if it's a threat or a promise, but then giggles to self emoji, shocked faced emoji, hashtag Survivor Halloween.
So what's mine again? I'm Festernino?
Festernino, like you're a zombie corpse with hundreds of flies that attack people.
So
your skin's
like,
festering.
I'm a festering corpse.
And you've got an army of attack flies.
Okay. Not Do I control them or they've actually, they killed me?
He does not make that clear, but I have to say of the three, you're the worst one because Rupert's an axe murderer who debones his victims. So you're not going to mess with him. And Russell Hans is a Dutch lying, cheating, stealing ghost. You're just a rotting body with vengeful flies. It's upsetting.
I'm trying to do a Dutch Russell Hans, but I don't know what it sounds like. I think I could do like a Norwegian Russell Hans. Is that the same?
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Yeah, the game is flawed.
It's the hardest I've ever laughed in almost 4 or 5 years of podcasting on a podcast. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Russell Hunt's baby.
That was a little Mama C. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't.
That's the best thing that's ever happened. Okay. Bryce Isaiah. Bryce Johnson.
Yes.
Purple Pants Badass himself. I don't know that I can do the rest of this.
You're doing great.
How can I sign up to be hashtag brochacho? Because I'd love to feed John. Heart eye emoji, laugh cry emoji.
Okay, good. Is it harder to be a brochacho or to get on Book Cameo?
T-Bird? Let us know.
I'm on it.
Mama C, speaking of Mama C, Carolyn Rivera.
Yeah, baby.
So I was able to curate these tweets, and I was going to ask all of them. No disrespect to Carolyn, but as I went to delete them, I changed my mind. I kept them all, and I would like to officially submit Carolyn, what's wrong with me today? Carolyn.
It's a long podcast.
As the new Rupert.
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Well, I want to read them like Rupert, but I could try. No trick or treating because it's White Rice Wednesday. Who's ready for tonight's episode? But then she has the like self-indulgent hashtags. Hashtag yeah, baby. Hashtag Mama C. Then she just tweets. Hashtag Jacketgate is alive and well tonight. Hashtag Survivor. Hashtag CBS. Hashtag yeah, baby. The original alliances are beginning to break. It's about to go down. Hashtag yeah, baby.
Couldn't let me win that for my kids, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, you know, using your own hashtag, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
It's really why I was going to cut all of these, but now I feel like I'm embracing it. Here's one that doesn't have a yeah, baby. It's just, and then there was three, ...
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you need a Rupert Tweets replacement or if you need some inspo, you go to Carolyn's.
Yeah, because Rupert, I know that he did not tweet this episode.
Honestly, I don't think I could handle the game of this time. Oh, my throat hurts from laughing so deeply. Okay. So
you're not going to have to be medevac from the podcast, right?
We're almost done. It's like I can see the end.
Okay.
PG Law, also a great guest, said, "There's two kinds of people I hate, lazy people and stupid people. Elizabeth is a mood. #Survivor37.
Elizabeth is a mood.
Yeah, she's a mood.
I don't know what that means, PG.
It's like PG, like, is a mood, like, is like PG identifies with that. Like, lazy people, hating lazy people and stupid people is a mood.
Okay. Are you following that?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Like, I'm an Elizabeth now?
You're Elizabeth now?
Well, if I hate lazy people and I hate stupid people so much that I'm an Elizabeth.
Okay. That's just like, it's saying something like is a mood is like, that's like a mood that I've been in. Like,
I never heard anybody say that before. Did PG invent that or do people say that?
Yeah, PG invented it like Terry Dietz actually invented Bro Chacha.
So other people say it.
Yeah. It's a mood.
It's a mood. Okay.
Also, the survivors don't know that you could just do #Survivor. So we have Survivor 37. Later, we have Brett LaBelle using #Season 37, not even hashtagging Survivor. That's a mood.
Well, you have to be, you know, great on a curve for the Gen Xers, Allie.
So I have a conversation, an exchange between Brett LaBelle and Zeker Chief, Zeke Smith.
Okay.
Brett said, Survivor Season 37, a.k.a. The Crying Game, cry emoji.
Yes.
Zeke says, sounds like a bunch of @real Dave Wright.
Millennials versus Gen X cast, they like to, bust each other's shoes.
Is that a phrase?
I think that's a nicer way of saying another phrase.
All right. So then we have an exchange between Joe Mina and the great Stephen Fishback, who, again, very graciously pretended to know who I was on the know-it-all.
Yes. Okay. That. What could go wrong here when Joe Mina and Stephen Fishback get together?
Well, don't be too excited. But Joe said, WTF, nonstop crying, must be the season with the most tears. Stephen said, Survivor, criers versus liars, the most earnest, open-hearted contestants against the most foul and devious.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay. Criers versus liars. Could we do anything with that, Allie?
Is that going to Samoa?
Let's see. Well, I think that people would to come on and be like, hi, I'm a liar. Put me out. You know, I lie every day, all my life. Like, I kind of feel like there's not that many people that they could fill a tribe with, I don't think.
Well, it's like villains, right? Like, in that way, it's like, who wants to come on and be like, I'm a cry. I'm the biggest crier.
Okay, so maybe, is it a returnee season, criers versus liars?
I think it has to be, because how do you know who are the most open-hearted and who's the most devious yet? Like, I'm devious in my everyday life. I'm a burglar.
Yeah. Has Survivor done a season that rhymes? I feel like that they have avoided going to a rhyming this versus that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I feel like that they're against it. I think they would feel like it trivializes it.
So do you want more like criers? I think it'd be more likely to be like Survivor criers, people who are like the town criers and their relationship. You'd have like news agents and like gossips. And then you have criers, people who are really emotional. And then you have like John criers.
Yeah, John Crier.
On exile.
I don't think we have too many town criers. I think social media really killed the town crier.
But that's what I mean. It's like you'd be people who are tweet, like any social media managers, you'd have newscasters and you'd have like, oh, I'm really gossipy in my everyday life. Like I'm in college and I like always tell people what's going on. Oh, you're telling me that big of a stretch hasn't happened already on this season alone.
I feel like we have a lot of overlap between town criers and liars also.
Well, liars is getting cut. It's Survivor criers.
Oh, so it's all cry. Everybody's crying.
It's a tribe of people who are emotional versus a tribe of town criers and then a John crier on exile.
I think I'm going to pass. I think I'm out on Crier
Island. I think this is a great idea. All right. Maybe Steven will back the unknown person who said this. All right. So Michael Yerger and Brendan Shapiro had a conversation.
All right.
Michael said, what happened to the old greasy, sugary rewards on Survivor? ? Now they get, quote, spice and herbs and, quote, veggie kebabs. Come on, all I wanted was cupcakes out there, dude. Which, by the way, clearly he doesn't know his history because you're saying you got spices and herbs on your suit.
Right. Can we go back to Michael Yerger wanted greasy, sugary rewards? Is there a comma or a slash that's missing there? What is a greasy, sugary snack?
Well, then he offers that cupcakes is what he wanted. So he's, I guess, saying that a cupcake is both greasy and sugary.
I mean, if your cupcake is greasy, I think you're doing it wrong.
Well, let's add Brendan here, because I think Brendan adds a little bit more color on what might be going on. So Brendan then says, depleted as I was, I would have gone full Superman for a fistful of bacon emoji.
Fistful of bacon?
Emoji.
Yeah. I don't know if bacon is what you're clamoring for on Survivor. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but that was not something, the savory, I don't know. I think sweet, yes. But I don't know if a grease was what I was looking for.
Now, I'm not a bacon eater, but I have seen like sugary, like maple glazed bacon. So yeah, I feel
is
like
that what
really
Michael
is.
Yerger, his favorite snack is?
Well, greasy he said and cupcakes, sugary. But maybe Brendan is kind of being like, hey, man, I think you really mean bacon. You confused cupcakes and bacon yet again. Common mistake.
Yeah, Adam Pock is very offended somewhere.
And then I pulled from the person who pulled Josh Wiggler's tweet, who we already covered it, but he said, Carl shading know-it-alls after at Rob Cesternino made him his winner pick. SMDH, hashtag Survivor.
Yes. Did you see that Carl did have an exchange with Stephen Fishback where he did not mean the podcast? That he did clear that up, and Stephen had a back and forth with Carl.
Well, good. I can rest easy tonight. I'm like,
yes, yes. Although it did happen to be a week on the know-it-alls where Stephen came down not on Carl's side on the bamboo gate.
There you go.
Yeah.
Carl's not listening.
This was another clip that I wanted to play. And this was something that Mike said in the episode.
My gut says Lisa 1 minute and then Angelina the next minute. Like, I feel a choker on my neck, and like it's getting tighter and tighter.
Very visual reference for Mike White.
Well, I'm glad that he didn't end up like continuing with the gut analogy, because I wouldn't want to replace Darnell's sound drop on Max plays that all the time. Like, yes. My gut tells me to use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So now at least we have we have not replaced that, the great gut sound drop.
No, not yet. Not yet. Allie Lasher, great job. Thank you for taking over the voicemail segment. I appreciated the voicemail takeover.
I'll take over anytime. Get ready for a takeover.
Ready for a takeover.
Okay.
That is the greatest sound drop of all time.
Yeah. Are you going to have any veggie kebabs for dinner?
I am a law student, so I don't eat vegetables. I eat like ramen noodle soup.
Bread for this.
That wasn't the clip I thought it was. But we'll keep it. We'll keep it. All right. All right. Allie Lasher is on Twitter. You could follow Allie on Twitter. She's at Lash tweets. Is there an underscore in there? No underscore.
Which I'm surprised that you don't shame me for my Twitter handle. I don't want to bring on the shame because I like my Twitter handle.
No, I like it.
I feel like it's the only like non-name one that you don't give shit about or crap about.
I think it's good. I don't think I could improve on it too much. I mean, that you are on Twitter. There's no underscore. There's no numbers. There's not, it's memorable.
Ah, see, I thought you preferred like at Allie Lasher.
Well, I'm assuming that you couldn't get at Allie Lasher.
I went with Lash tweets. That was what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure I couldn't get it now.
Yeah. I think that that's good that I know who it is. This is good.
It's also, my name spelled out looks like a Lil Asher, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, what is a little Asher in your mind?
I don't know, but it makes me think of like Hannah Nessen.
Yeah, that's a bad one, right?
Well, that's her name, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, she explained that, I think, the last time she was on. You have to have her back on. We'll get to that.
Isn't her name Hannah Shapiro?
I think that's like the Nessen is like her middle name or something.
Yeah, but who knows anybody's middle name?
Well, Lash Tweets isn't a name. I mean, look, I'm gonna get behind my own thing. You're right. That's trash. Mine is the best. And
it's very good. It's very good. It's a, I'd give it an 8 or a 9 out of 10.
What's a 10 out of 10?
Look, if it was something where in my mind, I didn't know if there was an underscore or not. I feel like that. If I know your Twitter handle, without having to look it up, I feel like that's a 10 out of 10.
But isn't that a failing on your part and not mine?
I mean, if you could be one of the most memorable Twitter handles that I can remember it without looking it up, I think that's, you've hit a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you're right. I tried.
Okay. I mean, if my last name was easier to spell, then I'd be there somewhere, too.
Can you rank Nicole's new Twitter handle? I guess
it's
newish.
It's better than her old one, but it's not a 10 out of 10.
I think the problem with it, I think it's very cute. I mean, the problem with it is that if you said it out loud, like, oh, follow her at Nicole Says What, it would, people might type in essay.
No, I know. There's wordplay. I mean, it's not perfect. It is not perfect. So
what's it out of 10?
6.
Oh, okay. That's, I think, marriage bias, but I like it.
You think it's even you think it's even lower than a 6?
It's like a 5.
5.
I did remember it without looking it up, though, so I guess that gives it maybe a 5.
All right, Allie Lasher, what else is going on? You're on the Challenge podcast. Is anything else in season for MTV?
No, but it's just the right time to get in on Are You the One and the Challenge. Because Are You the One, the finale is next week, and you could watch that episode without having missed anything this season, I'm sure, and just join Adam and I to recap the finale and the reunion. That's where all the good juice happens anyway. And then
Adam Bongiovanni?
Yeah. I also know his Twitter without looking it up, at Adam Bongo.
Adam Bongo, that's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's like a good solution when you have a hard last name.
Yeah, so yeah, that is good. I'll give him a 9 out of 10.
And then Brian's, you're going to hate. It's better than his last
bus
one.
Bus driver's route?
No, he replaced that, but he got Cohen Brian underscore.
Yeah, the underscore at the end is a tough sell.
I mean, what are you going to do when your name's Brian Cohen? Like, that's got to be, every iteration of that has to be taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're doing that on the Challenge. That should end in the next few episodes. We're going to get into the meat of the season there, too, because
your boy
people
needs
kept
his
coming
meat.
Back. Yeah, he's bred for this. There was a great meat challenge where they had to hang from, like, fake steaks. It was, like, almost too perfect. So, yeah, check it out. We're having a lot of fun there.
Here, let me give you this one that I've been looking for 10 minutes.
This is a damn good steak. This thing is cooked to perfection, and I'm all about it because these biceps ain't going to feed themselves, so your boy needs his meat.
No one's saying that about the veggie kebabs.
What do you think about Kajenius? I feel like I haven't talked about that enough on the podcast.
Remind me of that.
That we had in last week's episode that there was some talk about that Christian is not a genius. He is.
Yes.
You know what a genius is?
A genius?
A genius.
What is it?
A genius is a step above a genius.
Oh, wow. That's a thank you. That's a high compliment.
Is that like being a Kali of Fury?
Yeah, I mean, I blacked that out. That's so stupid. So that's Dan saying that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that Dan is in a position to tell Christian what a genius is, like the rankings of genius.
Yeah. Okay.
Little does he know he's a robot, so he's not even on this. Maybe that's what a genius is.
Maybe. So smart that you're artificial intelligence. All right. Allie Lasher, this was so fun to catch up. So glad we did this.
Yeah, honestly, Rob, it is the absolute highlight of my year when I get to talk Survivor with you. I actually can't believe you let me do it. I feel like every time I do it, it's going to be the last time. Like, maybe I hope you didn't, but like a big wave bumped you on the head or something and you accidentally texted me. But I really, really appreciate it. I had an absolute blast doing this.
Okay, great. So nice to hear. And hopefully, look, hopefully the reception is good. I mean, if people hated it, I probably, this will be it. But yeah, I feel good.
Wow. Way to stand by your podcasters. But no, I mean, Well, my reception's never always
if everybody
perfect.
Hated this, then I mean, what I should do what the, not what the audience wants.
But you know you're doing something right when people have bad things to say. That's what I tell myself.
Well, I didn't say if one person doesn't like it. That's, you know, that's every single podcast.
All right, people, if you like what you hear, we're counting on you. Bring me back. I feel like I'm like campaigning
No, but well, here's the good thing. And this is why I like to do long podcasts, because the people that really hate it, they stopped listening. They only listen to the beginning. So
they didn't even download it.
They looked at it and maybe said, you know, or they listened to 10 minutes and they said, this is not for me. And then they tweeted about how they hated it. But the only people that liked it listen this far. So this is why the longer the podcast you do, the you're only talking to people that like it.
The first time I was ever on was one of the early times when you were like testing out separating the two guests onto two podcasts. And I originally was so psyched because I was following Malcolm and I was like, great, it's going to be like incredible downloads. I'm going to be on a podcast with Malcolm. And then you're like, ooh, tough luck. We're going to have to break it into two podcasts. And I was like, oh, shoot. I'm like totally anonymous. No one's going to download it. No one's going to listen. But maybe you're saying that nobody listening is better for me.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to see when that was. So I'm looking at Survivor Cambodia. Survivor Cambodia episode 12 voicemail with Ali Lasher.
That's me.
That's you. And Malcolm was on that week.
Never forget.
Yeah, he was here in the studio. Yeah, so I remember it.
I was so disappointed. It was awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ali, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Of course, follow everything that Ali's doing at Lash Tweets. It's at least an 8 out of 10 on Twitter.com. And then, of course, we have the Wiggle Room coming up. Are you pro Wandoff or no? I forget.
I love the Wandoff. I've been listening this season and I still, whenever I see Mike White, think Mike White. I'm tone deaf, but like, you know, that song.
Yeah.
That was great. I love Josh Wiggler.
Okay. All right. So we will be back on Monday with Josh Wiggler. So get your Wandoffs in by then, and then we'll get ready. Steven and I will be back to the regular schedule after the episode on Wednesday night, 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. We've got a great week coming up on the podcast to cover the merge, of course, that we are going to have on the recap podcast. In addition to the exit interview, Kellen Bechtold will be my guest on next week. I'm excited for that one.
Oh, I'm excited for that too.
Yes, and then I will be joined in studio. The Mayo Jar will be back. Nick Majorano, the Mayo of Slamtown, will be here to get into all your feedback next week. Plus AJ Mass this week to talk about the 13 archetypes. So a lot of stuff going on. This is going to be a very busy week on the podcast. So get ready. I'm going to put a lot of stuff in your podcast feed. I don't know if you guys are going to get to everything.
I'll get to it. We'll get to it.
All right. So be on the lookout for that. Lots of stuff coming your way to become part of our Robbins Podcast patron community and find out all of the benefits of becoming a Robbins Podcast patron, all of the bonus shows, the extra content, the Facebook groups, and more. Go to robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.